The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve?
Uh-huh.
Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader. Want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Tuesday, 18th day of June, 2013. Quick look at the numbers. The Dow up 109, S&P up 10, comp up 23, gold down $18.20, and crude up 11 cents a barrel. Just as I was heading into the show, I was scanning some headlines, and apparently the NSA has thwarted a plan to blow up the New York Stock Exchange. Now, that's the headline that I saw. Was that real time? Anybody want to type into the chat box? Is that something that was just uncovered? Because I didn't look at headlines earlier today. Is this new news or is it old news? Somebody, anybody? Just type it into the box, into the chat box. Because if it's new news, that bears talking about right now. If it's old news, we'll sit on it for a minute. All right. Apparently it's not new news. Michael, are you there?
I am here.
Is it new news?
Is what new news? I missed the new news part.
Here, I'll just Google it up. Okay, NSA bomb, New York Stock Exchange.
Oh,
what do we got? Here we go. Let's see what the timeline is on this thing. 11:56 a.m. Hey, I think this might be new news. National Security Agency surveillance programs help disrupt plots to bomb the New York Stock Exchange and the New York subway system, an FBI official told Congress on Tuesday. Oh, they're telling Congress, not new news. Okay.
Yeah,
it's new news that they're telling Congress, but it's not... In other words, they didn't try to blow it up today. That was
right.
My concern. Okay. All right. So.
Right. Yeah,
all right,
that.
So we'll move right along then.
Okay.
Okay, then. All right, guys. Welcome. If this is your first time, double welcome. Glad to have you with us. If you have any questions about anything during today's broadcast, simply type your question into the chat box. If you don't see the chat box, it could be because you're not fully logged in yet. You may be simply listening to the audio portion of the program. If that's what you want to do, you're certainly welcome to do that. But you can take it a step further. Go to CFRN.net. On the right-hand side of the page, click that great big microphone. That'll take you to a page that will allow you to get logged in so you can see the charts and participate in the discussion. Everyone is required to register once a month, but once you register, you're good all the way through to the 1st of July. In fact, you'll get an email every day that has a link. And so when you're ready to join the radio program each day at 12 noon Eastern, you click and enter with one-click access. Pretty cool. Now, here's how it's going to go. I'm going to give you the good word for the day. Then we're going to take a look at this chart, which is the S&P 500 E-mini futures. We're going to talk about the tweet that we had on Sunday night, 7 minutes after the Globex open. We're going to look at that on a four-tick range chart. We're going to see exactly how much risk we would have had to put on in order to take advantage of that trade. We're going to talk about throughout the program how we can use that information going forward. If we have any time, we'll take a look at some headlines. Okay. Now, today's good word for the day comes from 2 Peter 2:19. And it's entitled simply, I Listen. By what a man is overcome, by this he is enslaved. 2 Peter 2:19. When I first came across the story of Charlie Wilkes, I did a double take. A blind football player? Really? I want you to do something. Close your eyes. Yeah, you over there in the corner. You too. Just close, do it. Come on, humor me, all right? I'm the host. Close your eyes. Count to 10. Hey, open your eyes. Now, imagine every second, every minute, every day of your life is visually blank. Charlie Wilkes is 100% blind. He can only sense extreme light. He's smart, witty. He's a teenager. He even finds time to tell blind jokes. At age 5, a brain tumor crushed Charlie's optical nerve and stole his eyesight. After multiple surgeries, Charlie was completely blind by age 6. He saw football on television before he went blind and heard plenty of stories from his grandfather, Al Reynolds, who played in Super Bowl I for the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, Charlie plays football himself, and he plans to become a professional football player. When asked, "How are you able to do that?" he said, "I listen." I wonder if he realizes just how profound that statement really is. In an age of self-indulgence and a victimized mindset, this player stands out as an example of hard work and perseverance. He has accepted and overcome his adversity and is using it as a motivation rather than an excuse. By doing so, this young man challenges each one of us not to be defeated by our limitations. How many times have we told ourselves we can't do whatever it is that we know we're called to do because we lack the education or the transportation or the motivation or whatever it might be? Wouldn't all of our lives be more fulfilled and effective if we followed Charlie's example? It can happen in each life with God's help. With God as our strength, we won't see ourselves as victims, but as overcomers. Jesus said, in this world, you'll have problems. It was a statement. He didn't say you might. He said, in this world, you'll have problems. But take heart. Be of good cheer. For I have overcome the world. So friend, for you and I, it's pretty easy. All we have to do is listen, and God will lead the way. And that's our good word for the day. All right, let's go to the chart. S&P 500 E-mini futures. This is the hourly chart. Let's back it up to Sunday night, Globex open. Okay, that would be right here. I encourage you to put these dividing lines on your chart. It always helps to keep things in perspective when you're running an hourly chart. The little short day, that's always the beginning of your week right here. That's Sunday. Okay. This begins Tuesday. Obviously, this is Monday. So Sunday night, Globex open. 7 minutes after the open, I sent out a tweet that says, consider being long about 1625. There was a flip side, too. It said, consider being short below 1616, whichever presents first. It didn't matter to me which one presented first. Wasn't the issue. I knew what the market looked like. I knew where obstacles were in the path, no matter which direction price chose to go. And so we were going to trade it based simply on that. It took 1, 2, 3, 4 hours before we tripped the switch at 1625. Once we hit 1625, we went sideways for 1, 2, 3, 4 hours, depending upon how you count it, before it got underway. Now, if you had taken the trade at 1625, just simply said, hey, I'm going along 1625, because that's what the tweet said, okay? That's one way of doing it, but that's only one way. In this case, the drawdown would have been 7 ticks. 7 ticks. If you lost a tick to slippage as you entered that trade, then you might have got stopped out to the tick. This is for the guy that gets stopped out to the tick every time. And I know that guy intimately. Now, here we are, 1625, we get triggered to the long side, we have a drawdown, 7 ticks from 1625, then price marches north. We're going to come back to this in just a moment. We're going to look at that 4-tick range chart. But let's just look big picture at what happened. Price left this weekly trading zone at 2324. Now remember, I sent the tweet out down here at the Globex Open. I knew where the weekly trading zones were. They get published and sent out to all the partners by Monday morning before the market opens. But I was putting them together Sunday night. I was doing the initial calculations. And so we waited 1, 2, 3, 4 hours before we got triggered. And you can see that I had my tweet on the other side of that zone because I needed to know if price was going to be stopped here by resistance, or if it was going to have the strength to get through. That was part of factoring the whole tweet together. So we got above. Fine. Here we go. Look where we go. We go to the next zone, which is 3233, which acts as resistance for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 hours. We pull back. It looks almost as if we're heading back to 2324. But on this little retracement, we get a pullback. Now, maybe draw that. Let's do that again. In fact, I'm going to use this swing low right here. There we go. Okay. We get a pullback to the 24% retracement, not one I normally use and look at. I'm more interested in the 38 to the 62. That's where you always see me draw the big box, the strike zone. Just wanted to show you this was a very shallow retracement. It would have taken the 38 before I would have been seriously considering the fact that it was going to make that move back to 23.24. But let's keep going. All right. Price powers up through 32.33. And then yesterday, as we came into the radio show, I was talking about how 7 out of 10 economists, or 6 out of 10, whatever the number was, 6 out of 10 economists were confident that the Fed was going to begin some form of tightening by the fall, that they were going to ease up with this loose monetary policy, that they were going to stop buying all of these treasury notes that they've been buying. And I couldn't understand why stocks were rallying faced with that news, but they were. And so you don't argue with what the market, you know, if the market's, if it should be going south, but it's going north, you best just put your opinion in your back pocket and hitch a ride north, because you can stand there and argue all day with the market. You're not going to change its mind. You're not going to, you can talk reason all you want. Market's going to do what the market's going to do. And for many traders, that's a real obstacle that we have to overcome early on. Now, my opinion is not going to sway the market, no matter how much sense it makes. It's not going to move the market. So I just had to say, well, it looks like we're going higher. We shouldn't be, but we are. And the next logical spot on our chart would be this zone at 1642/43. Well, we started to pull back here during the show. And then a news article came out yesterday afternoon. It came out in the Business Insider and the Financial Times. And all it was a rehash of the article that came out early yesterday morning. But apparently, someone spun it a little bit differently, or it hit the right person the wrong way, and the same news that we had available prior to the rally, when it hit for the second time that day, it resulted in the market selling off from this. In 1 hour, we went from a high at 1638.75 all the way down to 1623.75. That's one big move in an hour. As we powered down, we hit the zone at 23.24. Okay? That's where the market found support. It's not unusual that price would find support in a big sell-off like this at a zone. It's got to find support somewhere. Just like as it rallies, it's going to find resistance. That's what the weekly trading zones really are all about. Areas in the market where we believe the market will pause to, for lack of a better term, make up its mind and decide exactly what it wants to do next. Does it want to continue up to the next rung on the ladder, or does it want to retreat to the previous rung from where it just came? So we come back to 23.24. We get a rally going. And the next hour, see, after the markets digested that news, the next hour we bounced all the way from zone to zone. Took back more than half of what we lost in the sell-off. Now price does this. You see me do this a lot, and I'll keep doing it as long as price keeps doing it. Price makes a move above the zone, pulls back to the zone, and then continues. That pattern right there, you're going to see it over and over and over, going north and going south. Okay? That's what price does. Watch for that. that little pattern right there will become such a great friend and such a great ally. Because can you simply go long right here when we break above the zone? Sure. But if there's a high probability that price is going to do that and then do that and then do that, if there's a high probability of that happening, do you want to get long here or do you want to wait until you've come back, found your seat, we went 1, 2, 3 hours before the real move north actually got underway? Now, if you are of the personality and have the patience to just sit through this, then there's nothing wrong with that. A lot of folks don't have that level of patience, and it's difficult for them to sit through this. That's why I pointed out, if you get in here, you may have to wait so you can enter either way. All right. Now, let's move on. Price rallies up to a swing high of 1639.50. Well, actually, it got to 30 and a quarter, and it pulls back within one tick of the zone. See this? It's really just the same thing all again. Price, you can't see it all because it's an hourly chart, but price moved up. Price pulled back to the... It did that same pattern again. Up, back, go. Up, back, go. It's all that information is buried inside of this hourly candle. If we had more time, I'd break it out on a smaller chart, but we're running short on time now. And then what does it do? Same thing again. Here. And here. Can you see how important that pattern is? We see it once, then we see it twice, and then we see it yet a third time. Okay? And where does it take us? It takes us to this zone at 1642/43. The zone I thought we were headed for yesterday when the news came out and the markets decided to sell off. Okay? Now, let's jump back real quick to Sunday night. We've got a tweet out. Consider being long above 1625. Here's the chart. See if I can blow it up for you. There we go. All right. Price, we have a bullish cross. Price pulls away from the BBC. Price pulls back to the BBC. We check. We have bullish divergence. We draw our trend line just like you see Michael do every single day in the live trading room and just like you see him do during the recap every day. Everything's in play. The bullish cross, price pulls away, price pulls back, bullish divergence, close above the trend line. Okay. By the open of the next candle after we close above the trend line. The open of the candle after the close above the trend line is exactly 1625. If you entered at this 1625, your drawdown was only two ticks. If you entered over here, the first time we breached 1625, that's where you had the seven tick drawdown. Okay? So we breached it here, but we didn't have an official slingshot setup. Patience. The whole thing came together. Picture perfect. Now, we had a tweet at 1625, and when the slingshot finally set up to give us an entry so that we only have to risk 2 points to take that bigger picture trade, what are the chances that it's going to be exactly 1625? I'm going to be honest with you. It's pretty rare. Okay, that's what makes this such a perfect textbook example, because it is the exact number. Okay. When you start looking for this in real time as you're trading, this entry could have been 1623.75. It could have been 1627 and a quarter. But you know that 25 is a trigger, so we got to get through 25 first. Then you're looking for your setup. the fact that this entry price happened to be the exact number of the tweet, just one of those weird coincidences. But that entry, where you only had to risk 8 ticks, led to this, and then to this. Then we came back to test that important area, as we always, almost always do. See? I take this tweet line here and drag it across. We come back, we test that area yesterday, and then we take another trip. This time, all the way up to 42/43. Okay? If you guys have any questions on that, if you'd like a copy of that chart, hit me up, support@cfrn.net. With that, I'm going to pass the mic and the screens over to Mike. We're not going to do headlines today because, well, we just don't have the time. Maybe we'll talk about some of them later in the show once David and Robin come on. It's Tuesday, but Robin is going to be with us today, she said. So, Michael, it's all yours. Take it away.
Excellent. All right. I will grab the charts at this time.
And I'm going to hit mute and see who's been blowing up my phone over there.
All right. Yeah, I had to do that, too. This morning. All right. Let me just check to make sure that you're looking at the same thing I think you're looking at. Yes, I believe you are. All right. Here we go. Let's start the recording up. All right. Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon, everyone. Today is the 18th day of June 2013. Today our results were plus 1 tick on the soybeans, minus 7 ticks on the Russell, plus 3 ticks on crude oil, plus 16 ticks on gold. That's what our day was like. It took us 95 minutes and 10 trades to get to $132.5 per contract, and we had a total of 10 trades this morning. Okay, so that pretty much says everything right there. We are currently at $3,120 per contract profit on the month of June. In the 12 trading days of the month of June, we got $3,120. We're up $3,120 gross. Okay, if you apply an $8 per turn commission to each one of those, then you would still be up $1,928 so far for the month of June. That's per contract. Only in the 2 hours in the live trading room. Today, actually, we had to end a little bit early. I cut out after 95 minutes. I had to go. My son's last day of school. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so we're at $3,120 per contract. Our goal for the month is $6,292.50. We have a little bit of work to do here. We have eight trading days to get there. Make it happen. We'll see how it goes. But we do definitely have some work to do to get up to that. That is our monthly high in the live trading room. It was last month, $6,292.50. This month so far, we're at $3,120. I believe the nearest one to that was February, when we had the whole month of February at $3,900. Before that, it was January, it was $4,047 for the whole month. But we're only halfway through the month. So we still have some work to do to get there. If you have not taken a free trial with us, go to www.cfrn.net/apply. Sign up for the free trial there. If you do sign up for our free trial, you get access to everything that you see here. You get access to our live trading room for 5 business days. You get access to all the indicators, the charting platform. You get access to Dwayne and I. You get to sit in our live trading room with us and watch us put trades on, take trades off. You get to watch us win, and occasionally you get to watch us lose. This morning, I had a losing trade. I had a losing trade on the Russell, and I never got back above zero on the Russell. We are down 7 ticks on the Russell. For what it's worth, I just mentioned the losing part of it, and thought I would highlight that we do, in fact, have losing trades. You can tell on the days right here in this column, the number of minutes that it takes me to get my 2 points. You can tell that some of these days I started out with losing trades. today I didn't start out with a losing trade, but I did have a losing trade shortly after I started out, and that made it take a little bit longer. That, and I missed a bunch of trades. I'll go over all that shortly. But this column right here is the number of minutes it took for me to get to 2 points, or I should quantify that. $100 per contract. All right. $100 per contract. That's what this column is. And this is the number of trades that it took. All right. It's all good stuff. Every day that you see in here, every green bar that you see in here, is a day that we made our 2 points and we ended positive. The yellow ones are days we didn't make our 2 points, but we didn't end negative. The one red day on the year, back here, February 7th. Slide that over. I know that day. February 7th was our one down day this year. We're minus $80 a contract on that one. That's it. So far this month, we are on track to having another all-green month. You know, the month of May, we hit our goal every day. So far in June, we are on track to doing the same thing. Let's see. Let's get into the trades now, okay? We'll start out with crude oil. On crude, we had a couple of trades on crude this morning. Missed a bunch of them. Now we missed one right here. But we'll start out with the crude. All right, nice head and shoulders pattern right here. Shoulder, head, shoulder, neckline. When the neckline broke, it went down pretty well. This was earlier in the morning. We missed all these trades. We missed this long here. We missed this short here. We missed this short here. I didn't even highlight this one. Oh, did we put in a lower swing? No, we didn't. That's why we didn't take that. But we missed this short right here. We finally shorted down here, took a little bit of profit, shorted again right here, took a little bit more profit. And that was it. That was all we did on crude oil this morning. Okay, there were some more trades in there that we missed, I'm sure, somewhere along the day here. Right in here, there was a long trade for, you know, 10, 12 ticks, something like that. Right here, just now, there was a long trade right here at 97.91. And you can see that's already, from 97.91, it's already up 11 ticks right now. Okay, it's already up 11 ticks. And what I would look for on this, it's probably not going to do it right now because the green line got into the cycle, but what I would look for is a pull back down to the BBC and a move up to this level up here at 98.08. That's what I would look for on the crude oil. Okay, could go straight up to 98.08 now. The entry would have been on the up close of this bar right here at 97.91. All right, you see you put in your higher swing, you pull back down, test the BBC, give an up close, bullish divergence, blue cycle, and there it goes. It went right up to 98.08 anyway. Okay, I wasn't sure if it was going to have the, if it wasn't going to have the momentum to get up there, but it did, and there it is, 98.08, just like that, guys. And that's how it works in the live trading room. Trade set up, we tell you where they're there, and you can get into them. And that's it. In the Russell, this was our one losing trade on the Russell this morning. Let's scroll back there, right here. All right, we had put in a new high. We had closed up above the trend line. We had some bullish divergence. I got long. It stopped me out, and then changed directions. Okay. There were a couple other spots in here. There was a shorting opportunity in here, another one over here, another one here. When it came down over here, there was a spot in here, I believe, where you would have needed to close up above the trend line to get long, and it needed to get up above this level right here. Okay, I didn't take any of that. There was another one right in here I missed, and this, well, drawing your trend line. Nah, there was nothing in there. Nothing in there. Okay, so there wasn't a ton available there on the Russell today. The ES was going into a weekly trading zone for a good portion of the morning, and so we weren't looking to get long on the Russell while the ES was going into the zone. Okay, gold, we made some decent money on gold. We had some pretty good trades on gold today. There was one in here. This box right here, I had drawn this box. Was it that box? No, it was this box over here. No, that was the box, but this is the area right here. I tried to get into this trade, and I was explaining to people that this is why I don't put targets on my trades, because I missed getting into this by a tick. I tried to get in, it didn't fill me, and then it dropped 30, 31 ticks in like 2 seconds. That's why I don't put targets on my trades. Because if I had an 8-tick target, I'd have gotten 8 ticks. Now, if I had gotten filled, I'd only gotten 8 ticks. But without having a target on there, it would have dropped, you know, these 31 ticks in 2 seconds, and I could have just exited the trade down here, or just, you know, somehow exited the trade or dragged my stop or done some kind of thing to lock in a lot more than 8 ticks. But as it is, we took a short trade in here, took a little bit of profit. We missed a long trade in here. We took a long trade in here. I think we took 1 tick profit on that. We missed that huge trade right there. We missed another one here. We took some profit on this, missed that one. There was no trade set up in here. There was actually a long trade set up in here. But I didn't take the long trade. I was looking for the thing to go long, but it just didn't come together. And it dropped through there. There was no trade set up, no way to get into this on the way down. It changed directions, and all this happened really quickly in here, okay? You can see from 10.09 to 10.10. This is 10.09.56 to 10.10.03. This is 7 seconds from here to here. So it all happened really quickly. There was a long trade in here. This one had a long trade right in there. You had to be right on top of it, though. There was a short trade in here that we did take, and we missed this follow-up trade right there, okay? There was a short trade in here that we missed, and a short trade in here that we finally took. That was the end of our trading for the day. Now, as it turned around, there was an opportunity to get long right here for this move up, another opportunity to get long right here for that move up, and the Russell is just running up right now. And that was it for the morning. Now, right in here, there was a bullish cross to test to the BBC with an up close. So on this current move right now, there was a spot right here where you should have gotten long. If you are a CFRM partner, then you have all this stuff right in front of you, and you should have gotten long right in there. You should have been okay with that. All right. Now, I'm going to bring back the crude oil because I showed you a few minutes ago. Right in here was a long trade on the crude, and I said it should get up to 98.08. You see how it got right up to 98.08, and it stopped. Stopped right there at 98.08. Now, when the green line gets up into the cycle like this, you expect it to pull back again. So it's time for it to pull back here. All right. Let's see. We'll go from there. Let's see, Jim. On my recap, there are weekly trading zones. See, there's a weekly trading zone right here, Jim. There's no weekly trading zone in gold. There's no weekly trading zone in crude. There are weekly trading zones in the Russell, and there's weekly trading zones on the ES that I look at. All right, we don't have weekly trading zones on the NQ, soybeans, copper, the yen. So there are weekly trading zones, and they do make a difference, actually. For me, anyway. Okay, you don't have to pay attention to them if you don't want to, but I do. Let's see. I think they are critical component to the whole thing. All right. Now, this morning on the ES, let me blow the ES up because there were some trades this morning on the ES. Okay. On the ES, right in here at 9:30 after the open, I had said this up close right here was a long trade, and that moved up. Once it moved up, it gave an opportunity to exit and expect another one. We never got the entry on the upside again, okay, until way over here. An hour later, there was another long trade right in here. They went right up to the weekly trading zone. All right. From there, there's nothing else. There's no other trades. There were 2 trades on the ES this morning. Okay. And you do pay attention to the zones. The zones are in here, and they are there. Sometimes the zones don't show up on my 4-tick range charts like on the Russell. Okay. If I flip this to a, we'll say, a 15-minute, hopefully here, yeah, there's the zones. Okay. We just happened, the Russell is going up to a zone here at 9.95. Okay. That's what's happening right now. The Russell is going up straight up to a zone at 9.95. If we flip this back to a 4-tick range chart, there was an entry in here on the 4-tick range right in here on this move up. I know if I were doing this in the live trading room, I would have said this is a little long in the tooth and I'm going to wait for a deeper pullback. That's what I would have said. Okay, so I wouldn't have taken the long trade right here, even though it worked out. I know I wouldn't have taken that. Crude oil is really having trouble right there at that 98.08 level. If we look at 98.08, we'll blow it up a little bit here. Let's look at the big picture. Come on. There we go. The bigger picture. My charts are hanging here. This 98.08 level. Beyond that, we'll go up to 98.17, 98.38, and ultimately 98.49. We do have bullish divergence. We need a pullback and a test of the BBC. Okay. So there's an opportunity. There could be an opportunity to get long on this again. Okay. All right. Copper. I didn't take any copper trades this morning, but there was one trade, maybe two trades that we pointed out. This down close right here and this down close right here on the copper. I missed both of those. All right. The Russell. Okay, the crude oil. Let me just jump back in here. Okay, we broke through on the crude. Broke through on the crude with momentum. So watch for that crude. What did I say? 98.17? Is that what I said? 98.08, then above 98.08, 98.18. Okay, we just about popped to there already. We got up to 98.16. And we just got up to 98.18. All right, so it should keep going here. You should get a pullback here with some opportunity to enter the trade again. Now, the original entry on that was back here. All right, this up closed down here at 97.91. Right there. Bullish divergence. Bullish cross. Now, if I bring the picture up, I'll show you. Step one. Is the MA1 over the BBC? Step 2, price pulls away. Step 3, it comes back, tests it, gives an up close. Step 4, you have bullish divergence with a red cycle. Now, this picture was taken back on the G contract. You can see we're on the N contract now. It's the same thing over and over and over again, all the time. It's always the same thing. All right, slide that off. And I showed you copper. We didn't do anything with whatever this is, with the yen. I showed one trade on the yen, this one in here, in the pre-market. Actually, that wasn't the pre-market, it was after the open. But there was a long trade here, there was a long trade here. There was a long trade here, a long trade here. Yeah, there was plenty of opportunity.
Did you already answer Jim's question,
short trade in
by
here.
The way?
Oh, yeah, I just did. Yep. Okay. Short trade here. Yeah, I just showed it to him. The zones in here, we do have zones, but we don't have zones on every market. I think because I had been looking at gold, crude oil, and you couldn't see the zones on the Russell because we're in between them, that he hadn't noticed the zones.
But we gotcha.
Yes. All right. Now, soybeans. We took a couple soybean trades this morning. Let's see. Our first trade right here. Soybeans do not have weekly trading zones, but we took a long trade right here. We got 4 ticks profit on that trade. We were looking for it to get up above this level right here, all right? And you can see it stayed below that level for a full hour. We took a long trade here. We got 4 ticks profit. We took a long trade here. We lost 8 ticks, so we're at minus 4 ticks here. Over here, we took another long trade. Once it broke through that level and it gave us an opportunity up here, we took another long trade, and we made 5 ticks on that. That put us at plus 1 on the soybeans. You can see there were more opportunities in here. After the live trading room ended, right over here, is a shorting opportunity. Just looking around, right here was a shorting opportunity. All right, with the higher swing, yeah, we missed all that this morning. And actually, let's see. Yeah, right in here was another shorting opportunity. I suppose you would have stopped out on that one, though. There. And that was it on the soybeans. All right. Let's see. Jim, I don't know if you can hear me. Jim, can you hear it all right now, Jim? Because I already answered your question twice. Would you have to take all these trades? No, actually. You know what, Robert? The question is this. Would I have to take all these trades in these markets to reach the daily goal that I mentioned while showing my spreadsheet? Actually, no, you should do much better than I do. Let's take gold, for instance, or even crude oil right now. No, I just missed this trade right here in crude. Okay, this trade right here alone was better than what I did with all the trades that I took. Okay, this trade right here alone was better than I did with all the trades that I took this morning. But if you focus on a single market, you shouldn't be missing the trades that I miss. No, I missed that one, I missed that one. Either one of those would have been better than what I did with all the trades that I took. Okay, so you don't have to take all these trades. You definitely don't have to. And, you know, the guys who are partners who have been doing this for a while, once you figure it out, it slows down completely. And you really should be doing better than I do. You know, in the beginning, you may want to mirror my trades as much as you can, as closely as you can. You may want to mirror my trades. But once you have it all figured out, you focus on one or two markets, pick whatever ones are most comfortable for you, and trade just those. And, you know, you should be doing better than I do. You know, but it is the same thing over and over and over and over again. This was crude oil. If you did crude oil today, you should have done better than I did. This is the Russell. On the Russell today, I was minus 7, but even with my minus 7, let's see, I missed this trade right here that would have gotten it all back for me. So there was this first trade. I missed this trade that would have gotten it back. I missed this trade in here that gave about 10 ticks. I missed this trade that gave about 5. Let's see, on the way up right here, I missed this trade. I missed this trade. And I just missed this trade. Any one of those three right there would have done better alone than all of my trades together. All right, you have to keep in mind. Go ahead. Go ahead.
If I might butt in right here.
Yes.
We talked about this yesterday in the life. Well, we probably touch on it every day. But when someone's new and they come in and they look at all the markets and all the trades, they're like, wow, that's a lot. I don't know if I can learn how to do all that. Well, the beauty is you don't have to worry about learning how to trade all these different markets. You could spend years alone learning how to trade the S&P 500. You could spend months learning how to trade gold or crude. You could spend decades learning how to trade currencies. What we've done is we've simplified the process. Rather than having to learn all these different markets and a whole bunch of different time frames, we teach you one trade setup using our proprietary indicator set, sort of a rubber stamp. You can then, once you learn that setup, once you know it, once you own it, once you can spot it coming a mile away, you know how to act on it, you know how to manage it, you know how to exit it, you can go and trade any market that you want. From the S&P 500 to gold, to crude, to natural gas, to whatever it might be. The euro, the yen, doesn't matter. Because all of these markets are auction-style markets. There's someone on the bid, someone on the ask. Price is going to continue to rise until selling pressure overrides buying pressure, and then price will begin to fall until buying pressure overwhelms the selling pressure. And it's going to go back and forth, just like that, from now through eternity, because that's the nature of the market. What this trade setup does, it simply captures the underlying rhythm of the market. We're not trying to catch the top or the bottom of any move. We're not looking to catch the high or catch the low. We know that, for instance, in the S&P 500, that the average swing is 3 to 5 points. Not trying to catch the high, not trying to catch the low. We're just looking to scoop a couple of points out of the middle. So when you think about it like that, I don't have to learn a bunch of different markets. I just learn one trade setup, and then I can put up a number of different charts on my screens, and if I see that one particular market is acting favorably today, it's got participation, it's got volatility, and it just looks the way I need a market to look to be involved. Now you hone in on that particular market and you use the setup you've learned to trade that market. That's one approach. Another approach is I only want to trade the S&P 500 and the Dow. I'm not even interested in those other markets. Okay, then you put up your S&P chart, you put up your Dow chart, and you sit and wait until your setup, the trade that you've learned, appears. When it appears, You recognize it because you know it inside and out. And then you take action. That's simple. See, the first couple days in the live trading room, things, as Michael said, move really, really, really fast. But by the third day, everything I just said starts to descend on you and you realize just how simple it is. And you go, hey, wait a minute. By the third day, you go, hey, wait a minute. That guy's just doing the same thing over and over again. I can do that. Exactly. You can do that. Back to you, Boston.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for clearing that up. I was just highlighting the areas in here where, you know, things just started moving right here. There was this opportunity here on the Russell that was followed up by another opportunity right there on the Russell. There's this opportunity here on the crude. I wanted to see it break through this 98.08 level right here. You see how it was held up there, and I said once it did that, 98.18, it's gone through 98.18. Now it's setting up for another opportunity on the long side. What you would do right now is draw a little trend line just like that. Look for an up close above that trend line. From the up close above that trend line, it should get up to 98.28 at least. Okay. That's all there is to it. Over and over and over again. The same thing. I've said this a whole bunch of times. I say a bunch of things because I say something for 2 hours every day in the live trading room. But there's two things. One is all this should not be exciting to you. This should be boring. Over time, you're doing the same thing over and over and over again. So it should be boring. Actually, it was right here, Wolfram. You were probably right. The trend line would have been like this. Okay. Bullish divergence trend line up close above the trend line. So the entry was right here at 993.9. The same thing over and over and over again. And along with that, and I do say this quite often, whenever I come into my office in the morning and I sit down at my desk, I know exactly what I'm going to do every single day. I know exactly what I'm going to do. I never sit down and wonder if what I'm going to do is going to work. It works. I never sit down. I never sit down without confidence in what I'm doing. You know, the only question I have on the down days that I have, you know, I showed you that spreadsheet, and I'll bring that back up, and I'll discuss this for a minute. On the days that I start out, like this day and this day, last month, this day I started out minus four, well, not minus four, I started out with four losing trades on this day, this very day right here, four losing trades. And on this day I started out with three losing trades. My only concern, I wasn't worried about whether I was going to end the day positive. I was worried about whether I was going to be able to end the morning session positive, because that's where I record, you know, whether I'm positive or negative on the day. You know, this down day right here, we're minus $80 per contract on that day. And that happened to be the day after my mother-in-law's wake. We ended minus, at the end of the 2 hours in the live trading room, we were minus $80 a contract. And then in the half an hour between the end of the morning session and the beginning of this session, you know, the half an hour that we take, I made $300 a contract, I think. Or $130 a contract, or something like that. But I got positive. I got net positive, and I made the 2 points that I was trying to make. But I just didn't have enough time in the first 2 hours. That's the only, you know, if I start the day out and I'm down, like on this one, on one of these days I was down $360 a contract, and I still managed to get back positive on the day. You know, positive at least 2 points. It was never a question of whether I was going to be positive 2 points. It was just a question of how long it was going to take and if I was going to be able to do it in that two-hour time frame. You know, in the two-hour window, if there aren't many opportunities, then it's going to be difficult for me to get 2 points. But in that particular, you know, in most days, there's with the number of markets that we trade on most days, on almost every day, as you can see, there's plenty of opportunity. And you know, on every day, I miss a ton of winning trades, a ton of winning trades. You know, I would almost say that I capture probably 20% of the trades that I should be capturing. And I miss 80% of the trades that I should be capturing. So there's, you guys aren't going to be doing everything that I'm doing. I don't recommend that everybody comes in and tries to trade 8 different markets at once and answer questions from hundreds of people all at the same time. I don't recommend that you try to do that. What I recommend is you focus on 1 or 2 markets, learn those markets really well. Learn them so you can do it with your eyes closed, practically. You're doing it in your sleep. And then trade those markets. That's what I recommend. All right. On the NQ, let me just jump on the NQ. I didn't trade the NQ this morning, but I did show some trades on the NQ. Not at that time. In here, I suggested a long here, a long here, a long there. A long here that would have stopped you right out. Along over here, along over here. And look at the head and shoulders pattern that's showing up right here. Anyway, that was all I had done on the NQ. There were some nice spots in there, okay? Steven, I think better. Why would they be any worse? I would think they would be better. I would think that, I like to trade the first 2 hours because there's usually the most activity in the first 2 hours. That's why we do it then. It would be pretty dry trading.
Read that question.
Okay. Yeah, actually. The question was, do I think I would have better or the same results if I traded all day? I think there would be better results. I mean, there's no reason for them to be worse. The trade setup is the trade setup, and the trade setup works. It just works.
He may be getting after the 2 points a day thing. That may be where his question is going. Should you stop after 2 points, or should you just go ahead and trade all day? That might be what he's referring to.
Maybe, or maybe why do I only do 2 hours? Either one. The 2 points a day, why don't I stop? Because it's a trading room and a training room. I'm there to teach people how to trade, and I'm there to show people that it can be done live, in real time, with real money, in front of you guys.
Is the day we would like to just stop, but we're committed to continuing to trade for the entire 2 hours.
That's right. We say we're going to do 2 hours of trading, and we do. If I tried to trade all day, yes, I would get tired. That would be very tiring. If I tried to trade 8 different markets and answer questions from hundreds of people all day, that would be very tiring. Our Thursdays are, for Dwayne and I, we start the morning, we start Thursday mornings with an hour-long meeting before we even start the live trading room. Then we do the live trading room, and then we do this section, and then we have our partners meetings Thursday nights, which often last 3 hours. So, those are our long days, the Thursdays.
In my time zone, my Thursdays go from 5:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. It's a long day.
Yep. Mine is 3 hours. Just add 3 hours to that. Start at 8:30 a.m. to midnight. But that's our Thursdays. But
my kids keep a picture of me in their bedroom so they can remember what I look like.
Oh, my kids just come in and bug me.
That's my dad. I saw him last week. It's like Sasquatch, occasional sighting, the dad sighting. Or they captured me for a couple hours on Sunday, and we went out to Cookie Wow Show. I laugh about that, but I really need to fix that somehow. I don't know how, though.
Yeah, it seems like the more we
cloning,
try to fix
that's
it. The
it. Cloning. Call Dolly the sheep. She's got the answer. All right, well, let me stop yakking so you can finish your recap. All right.
Okay. I pretty much showed everything, didn't I? I showed soybeans. I showed the yen. I showed copper. I showed the ES. I showed NASDAQ. I showed gold. I showed the Russell. I showed crude. That's good. We'll stop there. If anybody has any questions about anything, you can reach us at support@cfrn.net. If you haven't taken the free trial with us, go to cfrn.net/apply, sign up for the free trial. If you have taken the free trial with us and you want to become a partner, send us an email at support@cfrn.net. We'll send you the partner info. Okay? That's all you have to do. You know, it's right there for you. It's within reach. So give us a call. Send us an email. Whatever you need to do. All right? With that, I'm going to wrap up the morning. I'm going to wrap up the recording. All right? The recap. There we go. The recap. Recording is done. We can head out to Vegas. All right?
Okay, guys. We are giving away a trading computer. Google, do this. Google E-mini trading computer. E-mini trading computer. That'll take you the very first listing. That's us right there. Click that baby. Not the ad, but the search results. Have a look at the computer. If you want to win it, here's what you got to do. You got to be on our mailing list. That's it. If you are a partner on the list, if you've ever taken a free trial on the list, the only people who aren't on the list are people who haven't taken a free trial. So you can fix that by going to CFR after you look at the lovely e-mini trading computer. Go to cfrn.net/apply, sign it up, lickety-split. We'll send you out a link for the platform and the indicators and the trading room, and we'll have a great time for the next 5 days in our luxurious live e-mini trading room. All right, 5 luxurious days. That's what you'll spend with us. Your cruise director, Michael, I'll take care of all the other. All right, let's
yes.
go. You ready?
All right, let's go.
I need that song, you know, The Love Boat. Remember that song?
Oh, yeah.
What a great
sure.
little formula show that was. There was always like 3 stories within the story.
Yep.
And
contained on a ship.
Oh, yeah. It was just good times. All right, guys, we're going to pause for very brief station identification. Do not touch your radio dial because we're coming right back with David Williams from PageTrader.com and Ms. Robin Dane, the trading coach.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310. And we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Morning, Dwayne.
Hey, morning, Dwayne. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be here. Is Robin with us?
No, she said she was going to be here today, but I don't see her in the room, so maybe she's going to be here a little bit later, perhaps.
Okay. Well, and good morning, Michael, and good morning, everyone.
David.
It's a beautiful day in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I think Michael has a better version, actually. Something like that. She's actually working on the microphone thing, though. So, well, I think with the microphone thing, she either has a really good, and maybe Plantronics has a really good microphone, or her voice is just very focused at a certain point as it comes, you know, out of her mouth, and it's just hitting it really hard. Some people have that. I have a neighbor next. Go ahead.
I was going to say she's just so excited to start. I think that there's always excitement in her voice, it seems like.
Yeah, there's a lot of excitement in her voice. I have a neighbor next door to me who looks frail. And have you ever known somebody who looks frail? He's too young to look frail. He's in his probably late 30s. But he's a heavy smoker and I think a heavy drinker. You know, he's not living well. But he has a voice on him that is just...
Some people would call that living well.
Yeah, some people would call that living well.
It's not living healthily.
Yeah, it's not living healthily. Yeah, that's right. They may be living well. They're going to trip and fall into a well, probably. That's living well in my book. And then you're living in a well and screaming. But they
he got that voice.
Yeah, he better use that voice then.
But his voice is so powerful and so resonant that, like that guy, Ted Williams, you know how you've heard Ted Williams, how he could be out in the middle of traffic and you hear his voice and it sounds like it's in a sound studio or something because it's such a complete thing. Well, that's how this guy is. And so I hear him from inside his home often as if he's in my house. I know it sounds hard to believe, but his voice resonates in such a way. It comes out of a window, and it somehow gets into my home, and sometimes it sounds like he's in a back room saying something, even though it's almost like the master ventriloquist. He's very loud.
That's not the video game guy, is it?
That's the video game guy. That's the video game guy. And I've had to go over there. You know, you don't want to have a fight with your neighbors. You want to be friendly with them, and you want to, you know that you're on good terms and all that. But this is not the first time for him in his life that he has run into this problem, I guarantee you. Him living in an apartment complex would, you know, the three floors above and the three floors below would be complaining, and the people on the sides. So anyway, I had to go over one day and say, now listen, you know, I shouldn't be listening to you and hearing you inside my home, you know, under any conditions. But I do. And he would play his TV in the backyard. Who has their TV on in their backyard? I'd like to know from the audience, does anybody have their TV in their backyard on so that the sound is resonating and bouncing all around and everyone can hear it?
The actual TV in the
yard. The actual TV is in the yard.
Yeah,
this is the early disease that ultimately ends up with your washer-dryer combo in your front yard. And that, of course, when that happens, you know the disease has taken full control. But putting your TV in your yard seems like a very strange thing to me. And he does that. And I said, well, why do you do that? And he says, oh, I just like to listen to the game when I'm outside. I said, well, can't you just get a set of headphones? Because I may not want to listen to the game, and I'm hearing everything on the TV. Anyway, so he's pulled back a little bit, but he's got a resonant voice on him that some people just have that. You know, they just have a deep, resounding voice, and it really carries. And Robin, I think, may be that way as well to a certain extent. So maybe that's why. And maybe Plantronics makes a great headset. You know, maybe you ought to check it out, Dwayne. I don't know.
That could be what it is. Mm-hmm. It's the headset. We'll blame it on the headset.
Let's leave it with the headset.
Yes.
So
actually, it's called the volume button in the control panel on the computer, but that's a whole other story. So
it is, but I don't know how hers is turned up. Mine is turned up pretty high. I don't know how I come through on your radio, if I'm loud or quiet, but she comes through with a lot of extra non-distorted. That's the thing. I mean, she could distort it, but it's not really distorted. It's just really loud. So, I don't know.
There's a microphone boost in Windows 7, 8, and even in XP. If that little box is ticked, that'll pump it up a little bit.
Yeah. Well, she's good. And how's your microphone, Dwayne? Are you
doing good? Fantastic.
Okay. Did you get the
minute of it.
Yeah, the thing that you needed to get fixed, whatever it was, the hook on and the...
It's all good, man. It's
you got
all
it all.
Good.
You resolved it.
It's all good.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right, Michael, I got your text. Hey, that thing you were talking about yesterday with Bank of America, there's an article out today, and it says Bank of America routinely denied qualified borrowers a chance to modify their loans to more affordable terms and paid cash bonuses to bank staffers for pushing homeowners into foreclosure, according to affidavits filed in a Massachusetts lawsuit.
There you are.
Simone Gordon, who worked in the bank's loss mitigation department until February of 2012, said, "We were told to lie to customers. Site leaders regularly told us that the more we delayed the HAMP." Now, I think Robin yesterday called it the HARP, but it's
no, there's two. There's two, Dwayne. There's two different ones. There's a HAMP and there's a HARP.
I know there is, but I believe that yesterday Robin had said HARP, and I think she actually meant to say HAMP.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. The one that they're saying that this was tied to was the HAMP, and I don't even know what that stands for, HAMP, modification process, the more fees Bank of America would collect. In sworn testimony, six former employees describe what they saw behind the scenes of an often opaque process that has frustrated homeowners, their attorneys, and housing counselors. They describe systematic efforts to undermine the program by routinely denying loan modifications to qualified applicants, withholding reviews of completed applications, steering applicants to costlier in-house loans, and paying bonuses to employees based on the number of new foreclosures they initiated. This thing gets really, really ugly. And at some point, you've got a disgruntled employee in there who may be, you know, there's always like three versions. Well, when it comes to the truth, there's your version, my version, and then there's the actual truth. So, but I don't think there's any question at this point that Bank of America is guilty of this. In fact, are they even denying guilt?
Of course.
You know?
Of course. Yeah, they're denying it. They're not going to say, yeah, that's what we did. They're going to say, no, that's not how it happened. This is what happened. And they're going to – this is what we – you know, partially when we talked about this yesterday is that, you know, the people are already under so much stress from having to potentially lose their home. And you would think the bank doesn't want a foreclosure. The bank was forcing people into foreclosure. They were – wanting that to happen, and that's because there were fees and other things associated. They were paying bonuses to people to go into people's files and remove all of the completed paperwork so they could write a letter back and say your file's not complete and go over that for 3 or 4 years. That's what the kinds of things they were doing. Don't let me around any of those bank bosses and people who are instructing that, because I'll show you my religious side. The eye for the eye. Because to me, I think that is just one of the most despicable things. And I would, again, say I hope that everyone seriously considers never, ever doing any business with that company.
Hey, Ed, you asked for a link to that article, so I'm putting it in the chat box for you right now. In fact, I'll send it to everybody. That's a new one, not the one I just read, but another one that has come out today. Former Bank of America employees now say they got cash and gifts for falsifying mortgage loans in new lawsuit. Oh, this may be a whole different scandal. Employees at Bank of America were given cash bonuses and gifts. Oh, this is different. We're given cash bonuses and gifts for meeting quotas of mortgage holders sent into foreclosure, according to Simone Gordon, the same former employee who filed the lawsuit in Boston. Bloomberg reports that Bank of America allegedly improperly disqualified applicants, according to HAMP. We were regularly drilled that it was our job to maximize fees for the bank by fostering and extending delay of the HAMP modification process by any means we could, including telling homeowners who called in that their documents were under review when, in fact, there had been no review. The bank has denied the plaintiff's allegations. Another former employee, Teresa Terlange, said loan officers were given restaurant gift cards and $25 cash awards for denying loan applications. You know, dear God, you know, that I could go home and sleep at night, that I caused a family to lose their home so that I could get a $25 spiff. Unbelievable. The incentives moved workers to improperly reject applicants. Loan officers that put at least 10 customers into foreclosure got $500 bonus. Can you imagine, you know, 10 families go homeless, 10 little kids on the street, you know, holding on to their little raggedy teddy bear so that you can shove $500 in your pocket? I mean, come on. $500 to put people out on the street? I mean, there's no amount of money that could justify doing that, but I mean, if you're going to do it, at least get paid. I mean, that's not even getting paid. That's It's just horrible. It says Bank of America has already spent $45 billion on claims stemming from the foreclosure crisis. Now, there was a time when the banks were holding back on the foreclosure. Well, first there was the robo-signing thing, and then there was the period where banks held off on foreclosing because of the robo thing. And so these allegations here, where did that fall into the timeline? The accusations that we're talking about today, was that
these are
during
over the
robo
last,
signing? Before,
I think these are,
after?
I think these may be over the last several years. This is not brand new. These are revelations about the last several years where it's starting to get cleaned up now. But over the last several years, people like Robin Dane, who dealt directly with Bank of America, went through this for 4 years. She is one of the victims of this scam. So it's been going on for quite some time. The bank, wouldn't you think the bank would not want you to be in foreclosure? You would think that, but that's not the case. They turned this into a profit center, the foreclosure, somehow. They get insurance money, whatever it is, they turned it into a profit center, and they wanted people out of their homes. And, you know, I wonder about, they say things like, well, the bank has spent $45 billion doing this. Whose money is that? Whose $45 billion did they spend on that? Do they have an account with $45 billion in it? I don't think so.
I mean, we talked yesterday about the incentive fees or whatever there were involved that Bank of America might have got by delaying these. Okay, but let's look at the other side of, okay, there's a foreclosure. Now the bank has a property on their hands that they've got to do something with. We've always heard that, oh, well, the banks aren't in the real estate business. The last thing they want to do is have to take back your property. So I understand the monetary incentive that perhaps was there for them to delay this process, but in delaying it, inevitably, it did lead to a real foreclosure, which, as far as I understand, the banking industry is not good for the bank and creates a problem for their balance sheet.
You heard right there, people were being paid to force people into foreclosure. If they got 10 people into foreclosure, you just said it yourself,
right,
10 little families, they're getting paid bonuses to get them into foreclosure.
Yes, so but then the bank is stuck with a property.
Well, they had some way out. They had some way out.
That's what I'm asking. What I'm asking is, okay, if Bank of America was aggressively trying to put people into foreclosure, then they must have had some – there had to have been some greater master plan.
Sure.
Like, what are we going to do with all these properties that we – because maybe you get a bonus check because you delay the half thingamajig, whatever. But ultimately, you end up with a home on your balance sheet that has nobody living in it, nobody making a mortgage payment, nobody paying rent. That's not good.
Well, it appears that way. Are these just mortgages that Bank of America – I don't know. Did they underwrite them? Or originated them? Yeah. Did they actually own them? Because I know a lot of the mortgages that go through Bank of America, they don't end up owning. You know, they sell them off.
Mm-hmm.
And
so that may be part of the answer.
Sort of government incentive. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, maybe some back-end programs.
What there's a possible – I see where you're headed there, Michael, is let's say a guy has a loan with Wells Fargo and he needs to get it refinanced. And so he goes over to Bank of America and puts in an application. Bank of America has no skin in the game whatsoever, and the longer they can tie that thing up under review, right? They have no skin in the game. They're just getting this fee for this HAMP thing. That's one angle, but based on all that's in this testimony from Simone Gordon, it would appear that the end game, at least in some of the instances, was to force the people into foreclosure, and if the loan was held by another bank or another lender, then Bank of America would not have the ability to force them into foreclosure, only to delay the process, only to keep them under review, so they keep getting this fee over and over.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's pretty horrible. That's all I can say. Pretty horrible.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. There it is. That's why I say make sure you avoid doing business with this company. They're bad to the core. Just bad to the core.
Now, Chris says that some banks are, you know, getting into the landlord business.
That's true.
Properties. And certainly that would appear to be where the money is at the moment, except for the fact that the bank, they're taking back a property that's currently worth $125,000 that they originally loaned $300,000 on. Okay. So it's not like they're coming out smelling like a rose on this thing. But
well, I wouldn't make too many assumptions, Duane, on this, because there's a lot of, just like how car dealers have all these incentives and factory rebates and all kinds of things behind the scenes, there's a lot of that going on in this as well. There's a lot of stuff we don't get to see that has to do with insurance. They're insured against these losses. They get paid when the house goes into foreclosure. Maybe there's an insurance payout. All kinds of things that don't leave them in the position that they appear to be in. It may actually be very good for them. So, or at the very least, they now have a home and they've been almost made whole. Now all they have to do is go sell the home or rent it or whatever the thing is. But
if they loaned $300,000 and they didn't get paid, the house is now worth $125,000. I would love to talk about the insurance. I have somebody come on the show. Maybe Rob can come on the show and talk about it.
I talked to him yesterday.
Because I don't know of any type of insurance that a bank can have.
I do.
And if okay, well then
I do.
Then what's happening to that insurer that has to pay out all this money, and who is that insurer?
Well, the insurance companies took a huge hit on this whole crash because banks insure their loans. There's all kinds of things they do on the back end to make sure that they're covered. And Rob has all the details on that, but I know that banks have insurance or they're eligible, put it that way, for insurance. They can choose to insure themselves or not, just like we can. But there is, in fact, insurance available for these loans. So you pay for that. Obviously, you pay for insurance. The insurance company is there to be in business to make money. And so when something happens, but when all these houses went bad, when everything crashed and burned, those insurance companies had to pay huge, huge amounts of money out. And insurance companies themselves reinsure their own liability. You know, insurance companies have insurance companies behind them often that they are paying to insure a portion of their liability. So it's pretty complicated. It goes much deeper than simply, well, we took a house back and we're upside down 175 G's. It doesn't end there. There's much more going on than just the simple, easy, obvious thing that we can see from our side of the table, you know, from just the customer side of the table. And Rob, I did speak to Rob yesterday, and I'd like to have him on if we could possibly on Thursday of this week, if that's a good day for you guys.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, why don't we have him on? He'll explain more. Also, he will help answer some questions if the listeners do about short sales, about the HAMP, which is the home, I think it's Home Affordable Mortgage or Modification Program. And then there's HARP, which is the other one. And a lot of people who have current existing FHA loans would go to HARP. And these things are there for you and I to take advantage of a government program, and the bank is stepping in the middle and making sure you can't get to that program, and they're forcing you into foreclosure. What a great bunch of guys. Yeah. Anyway, it's complicated. The whole thing is complicated. I know somebody who had a condo here in Las Vegas that was they bought it for $290,000 and it was worth $100,000. So it was $190,000 upside down. The thing went to foreclosure. It foreclosed and then it was sold for like $110,000. So there's an apparent loss of $180,000 there. The new person that bought the condo was a bank. It was a bank buying the condo, and they allowed, surprisingly, the people that were in the condo to stay. And he spoke to the attorney for the bank. And although he didn't get a lot of information out, a new thing that has begun happening is that if there are tenants in the property, the banks have now realized that it's to their interest, some of them have, to leave the tenants in the property rather than forcing them out and letting the property sit by itself. The property's in better condition if they have tenants that are quality tenants being used and maintained than it is sitting and doing nothing. On top of that, the bank does generate some revenue coming in from the rent. The banks never wanted to be in that business, but they've realized now that it's better for them, or some of them have realized that it's better for them to be in, you know, to be a landlord for a while than it is to let the thing sit there where it can be vandalized and where many other things can happen. So it has changed. You used to get letters from the bank when you would foreclose, and they were scary letters. That was what the first thing. They were really threatening you. Then they stopped that because they realized that even angered people more, and people would just walk away from their homes. And then they started writing the nice letters, and these were much better, saying, hey, we'll help you out. Here's the 9 things you can do. Let's let you put this through this process, and so on. And that's how it is now. The banks aren't threatening you. They're actually, you know, encouraging you to contact them and to see if any number of things can be done. So if you're in a position, if you out there in the listening audience have a position where you may have a house that you want to short sell, or perhaps foreclose, Rob will be here on Thursday. He's literally an expert on these matters. He's done probably 100 of them out here in Las Vegas, short sales and foreclosures. For people, you run into all kinds of situations, and he'll answer your questions on it. I think it's a good subject to have from time to time, and we've had him on before. He's a good guy, and I've worked with him, and I think he's as knowledgeable as they get. So if Thursday's good for you, Dwayne, I'll let him know.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay. Yeah, let's have him on here and go from there. Anyway, what was I going to say? It'll all come out in the end. What benefit? We were talking to Wayne about, you know, why would they do this? What about the upside down amount? It'll all come out in the end about how it all worked, because now the light's being shown on it in these, you know, there's going to be a huge class action lawsuit, you can imagine, against Bank of America. And I have to tell you, I'm not saying that Bank of America is going to go away, but there's going to be some hungry attorneys out there that are going to do a class action lawsuit against them for on behalf of thousands, perhaps, of people that this happened to.
Yep.
So
You being a if you own shares in Bank of America right now, you might want to consult with a licensed stockbroker and get some advice on whether you want to hold onto that stock or not, especially if you're in some kind of a long-term, you're in a 401k, some kind of retirement plan, and you're heavily weighted in Bank of America stock. You really should take a serious look at that, because this isn't going to go away anytime soon, and it's already cost them a lot of money, and it's going to cost them a lot more money. You know what? Even if they were innocent, even if they had done absolutely nothing wrong, they've already spent a ton of money. And to face these allegations and to go into court with their army of attorneys is going to cost them another ton of money just in legal fees before you even get to whatever fines they ultimately will end up having to pay, because I'm sure they are guilty. Now, we had a discussion a while back, the LIBOR rigging scandal. Whatever happened to those guys, and why didn't anybody get in trouble? Well, the Serious Fraud Office, also known as the SFO, has been pursuing a criminal investigation into LIBOR fixing for almost a year. Tom Hayes, a 33-year-old former UBS and Citigroup trader, has been charged with 8 counts of conspiracy to defraud for his alleged role in manipulating the price of benchmark interest rates at the heart of the banking industry. Hayes was one of 3 individuals arrested in December as part of an investigation by the Serious Fraud Office, SFO, which has been pursuing a criminal investigation into so-called LIBOR fixing for almost a year. All 3 were questioned, their residential addresses were searched before they were released on bail. Hayes on Tuesday morning became the first to be charged by the SFO during a scheduled meeting at the Bishopsgate Police Station. In a short press release, prosecutors did not give further details of the alleged offenses or even when they were said to have taken place. So they are pursuing this thing.
That's a good update.
It looked like it had just gone away, but it hasn't. Barclays is involved, UPS, or UBS, the Royal Bank of Scotland. Barclays has already paid a 290 million euro fine. So,
mm-hmm.
That's the
update
on that.
That's good. I was interested. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's another one that we should see at some point, and we are, some movement on. So it's very interesting, because that one does come from the top down and really plays into the idea that all these things are fixed. You know, all the gold price is fixed, the LIBOR rate, which, you know, the interest rates and so on. Anyway, we'll see how that plays out. That'll be interesting to see. That'll almost certainly result in a trial where a person will have to, he'll have to defend himself. He's probably, or, you know, maybe he just pleads guilty. I don't know. We'll see, though.
Yeah. We'll see. All right, you ready to go to the market?
Sure. Let's take
let's
a quick look around. Okay, well, let's take a quick look at the S&P. This is a S&P is a great market. It used to be greater than it is now, but it's reclaiming some of its earlier greatness. You know, it's starting to. It has been for this year. Actually, has shown some nice movement. For the last several years, it's been going up, climbing while there was nothing but bad news. But the fact is that even while it was climbing and really doing a lot of directional movement over time, it really wasn't as tradable as it may have looked. It was not as tradable as it used to be in the 90s. And many people who traded in the 90s remember the S&P being much more tradable. You know, I wish I had a better word, but that's what the word is. It's much more tradable. Now, in the last several weeks here, since we've had the decline, it is, it's been much more tradable. It's been much more moving around and more choppy, I guess, is the word for it, which is one of the characteristics that makes this market pretty tradable. And today we've moved up higher in our work. Everybody has their own set of numbers and so on. We have 1647 to 1649 that we think is very important and should be tested prior to a decline. So today we've gotten up so far to 650, and we're very close, and I would still like to see, we may or may not get it, but I'd still like to see a little bit more work done at that 47 level, if not a little bit higher. That's what I'd like to see. But the fact is they've made their first attempt at that level. I think that's important. And we will continue to watch here as they traded it. Now, we do have some things coming up. Today's Tuesday, so we have several days left of the week. But there is something, we do know that there's, as an example, there's a Fed announcement this week, and there simultaneously, next week, is a sizable volatility cycle. So what that means is that there's going to be a big move, and we've given out some of the indications for that move. But believe it or not, although this is not a forecast for this to happen, the volatility cycle itself is big enough that if up was what the market wanted to do, we could be breaking out to all-time new highs, believe it or not, within a week. Or put it this way, the week of June 24th, plus or minus a week, we could be breaking out to new highs. That's how big the cycle is. It's big enough to cause that kind of movement, which would most certainly be, you know, inspired by some news. Something would come out, and one of the pieces of news would be the Fed announcement that's coming tomorrow. So what kind of news would it be that would make the market be happy enough to jump up to all-time new highs? I don't know. I mean, I could imagine them saying we're going to raise interest rates, and I could see the market getting all happy about that. I could see them saying we're not going to do anything about the interest rates, and the market getting all happy about that. I don't quite connect news up, you know, as well as others do. I can make the obvious connection, but I don't know that the obvious is really something that is profitable. I think you have to have a deeper working insight into how news and the markets work. But I do know that there is a very important volatility cycle that we're right on, relatively speaking, the edge of. And because we're there, that means we could have a very big move. Now, the normal thing, having said all that, the normal thing for the market to do, and I can just come out and say this, is for them to be testing 1611. That's the normal thing for them to be doing, or lower. That's how the market will normally work here. But because of the volatility cycle, and all that means is that volatility itself, like everything else in the market, is cyclical, and it has its periods of sort of waxing and waning, you know, and they're periodic, not in the sense of like every 3 units of time or something, but they are trackable. That's a better way of putting it. And the volatility cycle that we have here is big enough to both make the market jump up to new recent highs, all-time new highs. But the normal thing for it to do is for the market to be testing 1611 or lower. So we're going to, I think, with the importance of this particular Fed announcement, I mean, Dwayne, you would agree with me that it's likely that they're going to do nothing with the interest rate. Is that probably a good estimation? Okay. I think it's likely that they're not going to change the interest rate. But what is going to be interesting is that they're going to talk and they're going to say some things that may or may not give a hint to what's coming in the future. And what's coming in the future is maybe they're not going to be buying the $80 billion worth of bonds, as an example. I'd suggest that you lock in, and Rob's going to as well, any of these, you know, if you're going to do something with 30-year money, lock it in soon. So anyway, so that's the interesting thing. The big thing for us, and then I'll be through with the S&P, the big thing for us is the big volatility cycle for the third week or for the week of June 24th, and we're going to trade into that. We have a whole thing that we're going to be doing. If you'd like to see it, all of it, it's a little complicated to lay out verbally because they're and we probably, I just want to say this, we probably won't take advantage of it until after the report. So, you know, there are times where we trade in front, but generally speaking, we don't. And sometimes if you don't, the thing starts moving and you miss the move, and that's just fine. I'll be here tomorrow, and I'll be here the day after that, and then the day after that, and the week after that. So I don't have to worry too much about any individual move. I'd like to get on it, but it has to be my way or no way, or the highway, or whichever way, because it has to make sense to me. I'm not just going to jump in just because the market's moving. If you want to jump in just because the market's moving, then I hope you know how to manage your risk well, because although that can work, it doesn't seem to for a lot of people. The market starting to move fast makes people want to jump on it, and especially after these reports, the market can have very tricky behavior for at least a short period of time, and then it gets underway. By that time, it's taken the starch out of a lot of people, and I've been through that, and I'm sure many in the audience has as well.
So I'm trying to cut back on my starch.
Yeah, cut back on that starch. And so I was just going to mention that if you have an interest in that, you can give us a call, and we will put you into the meetings that you can check out what we're going to do with it. But I did want to give you the natural thing. I promised the week before last that I would when we got to the 1 week early. This is the 1 week early, and so you can follow that or give us a call, and we'll put you into the thing, and you'll see our trade set up for it. Dwayne, it's all yours.
We've broken above 42.43. If we hold this pullback right here, now, guys, at the beginning of the show, I did that, and then I did that, and then I did that, and I did it over and over, and I said I'll keep doing it, and I will, because that's, and as long as the markets continue to operate that way, I'll continue to do that. Price broke above the zone, pull back to the zone. So now if we get a continuation of that move, that will lead us up to the next zone overhead, which is the final weekly trading zone we have overhead for the week. Now, how far away is it? It's pretty good ways, okay? let's call it 20-plus points. So this could be a very nice move going into the Fed announcement if we break above right here. I'll send out an official tweet here in a few moments as we move into the other markets. So watch your Twitter feed. We'll trade this if we fail. Okay, if the market fails here, we will have a trade on the other side, which will take us back to 32.33. So from this point right here, we're either looking to go to the next zone overhead or a return to this 32.33, which has been very good support over the last 24 hours. Okay, so that's it for me on the S&P. There's a couple of questions, David. One has to do with bonds, which we're going to go to right now.
We will.
And the other one, there was a question for you yesterday on beans. So just remind me that when you do get to the beans that I've got
this question.
I promised Ed yesterday that if he brought the question back today, we would certainly cover it, and we will.
Okay.
Now I'm trying to find the bond question. You want to go to gold first, or
No, that's fine. We'll go to gold real quick. I wanted to lay out the gold thing. We had been from June 11th, we had gone long earlier the month, in the month here. We're at June 18th today. Is that, we're 19th? 18th? So we had gone long between 1374 and 1369 based upon a bottom, a June 11th bottom that we believed would take the market at least to 1396. So we'd be buying, that would be just be an initial target, just a quick get a lead in the position kind of setup. And we got in within that 5-point range, and we held on. And over the next 2 days, the market made two attempts at 96 and got up to 94.5, basically. And as you know, we've talked about this so many times, that is an easy, easy place for the market to go to, very easy. And yet they were unable to do so. And I mentioned, I think, on the program here that we realize this may just be a dead cat bounce, but sometimes the market will look very, very tired and then have a very powerful sharp move. And that was the purpose. We wanted to get a lead in this position and then potentially hold on for higher prices.
Some people want to know, why does a dead cat bounce? Well, if you've been skinned that many times, you'd bounce too.
Well, there you are. thank you for that. And it's a true story. The market only got up to 1394.5. They made two attempts at it, and so we ended up exiting some of our position because, when they show that initial weakness near the number, it can mean there's enough selling pressure that they'll never hit the number, and that means they want to go lower. And that's exactly what happened here. But what we did and what everybody does if they're trading properly is we managed our risk so that we had our stop move up to 1370. By the time they got up there and attempted that, we had taken some booked some profits up at 92 to 93, and then the market today broke to new recent lows. And that is the proof now that's the proof that the inability to reach 96 was selling pressure pushing down on the market, meaning that as soon as that cycle ended and the market reasserted itself on the downside, it would break to new lows and so on. So we are out of the market now, and we're going to wait for further indication in gold. And as I've mentioned before, this idea for this trade is a very short-term thing because we actually expect new we'd prefer, maybe as a better way, new lows in the third quarter of this year in gold. So we had actually, in the end, it was still a decent trade, but we didn't get the second, we didn't get any further movement beyond 94.5, and we'll take the next trade that they give us here. So that's trading. That's just how it goes. And it was really, I think, I may say so, it was a nice trade. It was managed well, and the market ended up going down and confirming the weakness. And now we'll take the next setup. There are some really nice – gold is a very tradable market, and it's very readable. In our meetings, I had mentioned over the last couple of days that it's very obvious that they were having trouble reaching 96. That's a number they should have very easily touched. And that that's why we moved our stop up, is because, hey, there's an indication here. Let's protect ourselves. That's the whole business of risk management and so on. So in the end, you know, the 92 down to 74, there was 18, 15 points in this before we even figured out that it may not be able to go any higher. And then once we did, we brought the stop up, and now we're flat. And so I think keep an eye on gold, because there are some other indications that are going to be coming in the next during this week and next. A couple of dates of importance to us, to those of you who are watching, one of which, there's a couple in here, but one of which is June 25th. So we'll talk about that as we get a little closer to that day. And then, Duane, going over to bonds, this is a market, bonds today, that we had issued a buy signal on the bonds because normally June 19th would mark a bottom for the bonds. And today is June 18th, and they've already tested some of the important levels that's associated with this. And so we'll see if we can get, if the market gives anyone else an opportunity to get in before they move up. But any movement up is going to be considered short-term, like we've talked about. I am concerned about the bond market, and meaning that there may be a larger break needed. I hope they get a nice rally to let everybody, you know, have another shot at the interest rates and so on. But they came down pretty good here over this last month, and they've done nothing really, really wrong, but I am concerned that the market is tiring out of the, you know, the $60 billion a year, or $60 billion a month or whatever the government's putting in, and that that's not having the same effect that it used to. Now, was there a question regarding bonds, or did you say, Duane?
Yeah,
no?
let me bring the, let me get the chart up first. I think this question might have been on 10-year bonds, actually.
Okay.
But let me, I've got the 30-year chart up. Let me go find the question.
A lot of people trade the 10 or more than the 30. The 30 is really a different, somewhat different beast.
Scrolling. Could you or Dave comment on the bonds? Okay, I thought I saw. Is there a difference between bonds and notes? Is there?
Well, I don't know of any. There probably are notes, futures of some kinds, because that term is used. But the bonds and the term notes are often interchangeable. But I don't hear people doing that and calling bonds notes. I mean, that's an old, to me, that sounds like something I haven't heard in a long, long time. So Bert may be better to answer that question than me.
Okay, guys, if I missed a question specifically regarding bonds, type it in, because sometimes it just gets lost in the scroll. So just copy and paste it down to the very bottom there in your window, and I'll see it right away. Okay?
Okay.
All right, so just basically whatever you got on bonds.
We're long. Yeah, we sent out an indication that we want to be long into the 19th, which is tomorrow. We gave some price levels out for that, and this is part of our institutional stuff. But I for the listener's sake, just giving out the information that the 19th normally would be a bottom. It's probably likely that we put that bottom in one day early, and therefore the price levels become very important. Because the time factor may have not fully matured on the one day early, but in this particular case, it probably has. So, but we do have a trade in progress right now for bonds based upon that outlook. Going over to the euro continues to advance. This has been a very powerful advance over many, many weeks here. We have an indication that's setting up on this. We're flat in the euro right now. But a very, very big move up and over this last month. And this indication, if it does come through, will give us an opportunity on both the short the short side and the long side. These are longer term. These are not, you know, these are probably, you know, you'd be in this for a week or more type of setup. So you do want to check with your broker or ask Bert Schlichter, Daniel's Trading, 866, the phone number 928-3310, and he can help you with the margin requirements.
Bert did say he's on the phone, so he can't pop in right now, but
okay.
He did message me that the difference between bonds and notes is volatility and maturity date.
Okay.
So, Bert, maybe tomorrow, if you have a chance, maybe you could come on and spend 5 minutes and really kind of explain to us the difference and the symbols and where a person goes to look at it and how they trade it and margins and all that good stuff.
Yeah. Also, a number I think that's important on the euro, the 134.70 level, I think would be important on this advance. So keep an eye on that as well. We've talked about the crude oil market and that we're bullish on crude longer term. It's been going up since we've been saying that, and it continues to. This is now quite some time. The April monthly bottom, the bottom that they put in April, came 1 month early, and that was, I mean, just to lay the story out a little bit, that bottom was the market attempting to go lower off of the forecast January monthly top. We had a longer-term roadmap that required the market to go up from a November low to a January high, then down, and they did go down, but they in 3 months' time, they couldn't reach the natural level that they would go to during that time period, and that likely indicates a much, much larger movement underway on the upside. So that means we're going to see the 103s and higher in crude. So I really like the idea, in spite of the usual pullbacks along the way, I think this market is very good on the long side. So, and we have many traders in our group that are selling put premium and all that stuff, or perhaps using buying the futures, but a lot of it is in options for this particular market. So keep an eye on crude. This means, you know, high prices at the gas pump. I just got the news yesterday that although it's just a ridiculously small little car, the Chevy Spark is now available at a few dealerships. The EV, the electric Chevy Spark, is available in California. It's EPA rated at about 82 miles. It'll probably do 95 to 100 miles when driven gently for a day. It makes a beautiful little commuter car, has the OnStar system in it. By the time you get your California $2,500 rebate plus your $7,500 rebate, the thing costs about $18,000. That's pretty good. That's not bad at all. It retails for about $27, $28, and you never buy gasoline. Now, that's got to make somebody feel good. But
yeah.
I didn't tell you that just to get you hot and mad at the gasoline companies. It's just, these are just fabulous little cars to drive around, and you don't have to think about it. And by the way, electricity costs really, really little, and gasoline's going to go up a lot. So it seems like they're making more and more sense out of these cars. Okay, so check that up out of your Chevy dealer. You can go ask for the Chevy Spark EV and see if it isn't the tiniest little thing. But it does seat four people, does have four doors, does have a hatchback, does have all the electronics and you know, satellite stuff inside, and the OnStar stuff in case, you know, you want to have them download stuff to you. You talk to the OnStar people. It's kind of cool. And it, like I said, it'll get you 95 miles for a charge. And you can zip around and get all your shopping and all your little visits with people done and spend no gasoline. I have spent so little time at a gas station that literally they look like an odd thing on a corner. Like, what is that? Why, you know, even though I really know, obviously, it's funny to me because once you haven't gone there for a year and a half, I've only used 15 gallons in a year and a half in my car, a Chevy Volt, if you stop going there for a while, you'll start realizing, wow, that is a real time saver. I don't have to pull in. I don't have to get dirty. I don't have to have the wind and the sun in my eyes and trying to read the little card reader there. All kinds of little annoyances that you normally have in your day you won't have to do. You just plug in. You just fill up your car at your house. That's really a nice thing. Okay. We had... this is an interesting thing. I can say it now because we've been talking about this in our previous meetings during Monday meeting, which was that soybeans, and by the way, I'm still in August soybeans. I know some people are in November, but the setup for August is much clearer and cleaner to me, and there's still plenty of volume in August. So we're still in August. We were looking for soybeans to advance up to somewhere in the range of 1450, and if they failed at or near that level, 1445 to 1450, if they failed in that level, then they would decline back to 1431 into the 20th of June. Now, today, they did almost that whole move. They went up to 51, and they've already come back down to a low of 33. So 32 to 31 is the target. Now, the question is, you know, is there still any trade left in that? Possibly into tomorrow, and we'll lay that out. But this was the setup. And this is, you know, obviously only people who took advantage of it today would have the benefit of it. So normally it would take them into the 20th, which is Thursday. So we've done most of that move. Anyway, we'll continue to watch that because that's important. One other thing that I did not talk about yet is the U.S. Dollar. The dollar index, which is, you know, the opposite in many ways of the euro, we had a long trade in from a couple days back. We had forecast that the market would decline and touch $80.71 on June 14th, and it touched it both on the 13th and the 17th, which was one day late. In doing so, that triggered a long trade for us. We had a nice little baby bounce from that all the way up to 81.20. We instructed people to take some profits at 81.15, and then they came down and stopped us out yesterday. That stop out left us with some gains. And then we rebought the market yesterday for a second bounce, and today they went up to 81.15, and we booked some at 81.12. And now the market is back down near the lows. So if they go down, the low right now has been 81.70. If they, and we bought it yesterday at 80.83. So it'll be 13 ticks against us and probably 38 ticks in our favor from whatever the number was getting up to 81.12 if they stop us out. And it seems like they probably will. Our stop is only two ticks away on the downside. Again, we bought this with the idea that there's a nearby target that is likely to be reached, but there was a possibility for further advance. If that doesn't pan out, we don't just hold on to the position and hope it comes back if it keeps going down. We just stop ourselves out and take whatever, in this particular case, it's two trades that we've taken off the dollar based on this, and it looks like the dollar wants to go lower. So it's likely we'll be stopped out. So the stop out is we're really happy to be – we don't want to be stopped out, but we're really happy if it does hit it because, in a sense, we're really happy because we don't want to be in it if it's going to continue in the direction on the downside. If we don't have any indication to short it, then we just get out and we wait for the next setup. And that's what we're going to do. So we've had – you saw us do this in gold. We just did it in the dollar. We'll wait and see how the – thing plays out later today. And I think, Dwayne, unless there's any other questions, there's a few other markets here that are interesting, and when Robin's back, we'll talk about it. But I think that may be everything that we have of interest today for the show.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Guys, anybody got any questions on anything? If you have, type them in. We'll get them answered for you.
And while we've been talking,
Clock wants to know if you have anything on, and also Ed, if you got anything on natural gas.
I knew they would ask, and you know, it's fun just not saying anything until they ask. That's what I'm trying to do. No, I do natural gas, and I don't remember, but I probably did last week. And let me get over there. Certainly to our institutional group, we talked about last week marking a important weekly reflected wave bottom. And natural gas is now bouncing off of that low. Now, why I'm having trouble finding natural gas is because I rearranged my charts this morning. And give me just a minute here. Here we go. Okay. So natural gas had a weekly bottom that was due on time on the week of June 10th. Anybody with reflected wave knows about this. June 10th weekly bottom. And then their next top on the daily chart is due on the 19th, which is tomorrow, and it likely came today. My preference would be, just so you know, that we would have seen a little bit higher price. I would have liked to see 396 on the upside. We got to 395.20. Doesn't sound like a lot, but this is one of those early signs for potential weakness. Now, this is one day early. Tomorrow's the on-time day. So we've gone, you know, we've had the weekly bottom. We're now having a short-term sell signal, but normally there would be, I would be looking for a place to buy for a continued multi-week advance. So I like the long side of the natural gas market, either with options or with, you know, a somewhat skillful entry so that your risk is kept, you know, the amount that you're risking is kept reasonable. And then this again requires overnight, and this requires margins that sometimes can be dramatically, in some cases, larger than what you're normally used to. Not what the S&P is, but what it normally is for intraday trading. One of the benefits of intraday trading is that you have very, very low margin. You can, in other words, you can get into the trading and practice your trading with very, very little real margin requirement. So that's one of the reasons that day trading is good for, I mean, even at the very worst case, if a person wanted to discount day trading, he would say, well, it's still good for practicing in the markets, let alone to be actually making real money in it. There's some people who just don't believe in it at all. We do. We've day traded for decades, you know. I mean, so we certainly are believe in it. I also happen to believe in the longer term as well, but each one of these time frames has its own set of challenges and so on, and just being in a market can wear on you. You know, you have to take into account that there is some wear and tear about being in the market. Depending on how you think of it, obviously it's not that way. Some people are very excited to be in the market, but over time, you know, being in for several weeks, you know, can have some wear and tear on you. You got to keep your mind focused on what your position is, move stops, manage the targets, and, you know, all that until the trade is done. But it is wonderful. The whole business of markets is wonderful. It's just fantastic that they're here and that we can get into them, and that whatever manipulation and trickery that goes on there, for the most part, whether you believe in that or not, for the most part, the markets really are the open wild west, and you can get in there and really do some good trading, which includes taking losses, which includes taking gains, which includes every bit that you see on the program. It includes all of that, but it really allows you to simply grow your capital over time. You know, you're not trying to make $1 million in a single trade unless you happen to be trading in huge size. But what you're really trying to do is say at the end of a month, I've got a gain. I've got ahead now, and I'm going to try to keep that. And while knowing I have to risk some of it, go back in and find really good setups again. Because you do have to risk some of it. Some of your gains will have to be risked, obviously, in order to get further ahead. So we want to really manage the risk. That's why we always hammer that on the show so much, is because, you know, if you start thinking like amateurs do, which is thoughts like, well, now I'm trading with the house's money, that kind of thinking, it's going to stay the house's money. You know, it's not going to end up being your money. The moment you earned it through the market, not won it, but earned it, it's your money. It's not the house's money. And just by saying I'm playing with the house's money, you're already subconsciously saying it's really not your money. And you're going to end up giving it back to the market because it's the house's money. So catch yourself if you're using those gambling terms. And they're bad for gamblers as well. So if you earn the money, it's yours. And treat it like yours. Don't treat it like it's the houses, because when you think like that, that makes you act differently, and you don't act that way if you earn that money as a paycheck. You wouldn't be saying that. But because you earned it through a trade, it feels like it's free to you, and it wasn't free. You had to learn. You had to put your equipment together. You had to take your courses. You had to get up at a certain time. None of this is free. You have to put your time and effort in this. It's not free. It just comes to you in a different form and a different timing, and it's not a paycheck, but it comes to you in a different way, and therefore might feel free or freer to you. But if you start treating it like that and you know, in the end, you end up giving it back. So catch yourself doing the house's money thing, and now I'm far enough ahead that I can do some. It's really, in a sense, it's like that's what it's like what you're saying. I'm far enough ahead now that I can do really stupid things, and that's what I'm going to go do because I'm really far ahead now, so I can do something stupid.
Yeah.
So don't do that.
The intraday margins, guys, for the S&P, the Dow, the Russell, and the NASDAQ, if you trade with Bert and Leslie, $500 intraday margins. They go up substantially overnight, so you have to be aware of that. But intraday, $500.
That's cheap.
The leverage there is pretty incredible. Now, the math on this, if you take the current price of the S&P 500, which at the moment is $1,646.50. Okay, that's $1,646.50. Hang on one moment, please. Okay.
Yeah, right, go ahead.
I was talking to somebody in the chat room there. Okay, so the current price, $1,646.75 times 50 equals $82,337.50. If you buy one S&P 500 E-mini futures contract right now through Bert Schlichter, you'll have to put up $500 in margin in your account. You will control, at the current price, the equivalent, $82,337.50 of S&P 500 equity. If you go into your stock trading account and you want to trade any stock in the S&P 500, most brokers will just, without even thinking twice, give you 2-to-1 margin. In other words, if you've got $5,000 in there, you can buy $10,000 worth of a marginable security. You can work out other deals, but that's just sort of standard. So when you think of the difference between 2-to-1 and 50-to-1, that's incredible. And really, if you extrapolate it out, it's far more than 50-to-1. Because if you take 500 and you carry that thing out to $82,000, okay, that's much more than the 50-to-1 that it looks like on the surface. Now, leverage is a double-edged sword. You've heard that, and it's true. Okay, that's why you have to trade with a hard stop. When you put up $500 in margin to trade an S&P 500 E-mini contract, yes, you could lose your $500. But if you're trading with a hard stop, let's say your hard stop is 2 points. What's 2 points worth? $100. Okay. So what are you actually risking to trade the one contract? Well, let's face it, you really are risking the entire $500 because you're putting that into play in the market. However, you're using a hard stop, so unless there's some slippage, okay, you know, fast-moving market, crash, whatever, unless there's some slippage or something out of your control, you're really only risking $100 if you use a 2-point hard stop to control $83,000 of equity. Now, I don't know if you've tried to borrow money lately from a bank or any place else. It's not real liquid out there. It's kind of tough. You got to twist a few arms or say please with a tear in your eye. This opportunity that's in front of us right here, right now with these markets, not only is the leverage scenario that I just explained to you, not only is that good, but the markets are behaving nicely right now. There's volatility. There's two-sided action. There's movement. There's flow. This right here, right now, guys, it's probably about as good as it gets. You know, I can't even imagine a scenario where it gets any better than this, unless you had that proverbial crystal ball that really could tell you what's going to happen next. Okay, so this is you're living it right now. So take advantage of it. Don't be careless. Don't be reckless. But recognize the opportunity that's in front of you. Deploy your money in a smart manner. And by all means, give Bert a call. Toll free, 866-928-3310. talk to him about your goals, how much capital you have to work with, what your horizon is, how aggressive you want to be or don't want to be. And even if you're not a client of his, he will talk to you and he'll work very hard to earn your business. Okay. So in other words, he'll answer questions even though you're not a client yet. Not only will he work hard to earn your business, he'll work even harder to keep your business. So give him a call, toll free, 866-928-3310. And, David, the question that we had on beans was, weeks ago in July beans, I believe, David said he didn't think we would see $16 beans for a long time. Now that we are in November and the futures prices are a few dollars less than July beans, is the level still 16 or is it now around 14 for the November beans?
I will have to look and see what the indication was that made me say that so that I can address that. I would have to have a few minutes. Give me just a second here. 16. Now, why was 16 important? I'm not sure why 16 is important. I may have to take a day on that because we have updated our charts from in fact, I don't know if they still are showing July. They probably are. Yeah, I think they are still showing.
They are.
July.
Yeah, I just had it up.
We're up 15. We had a swing high in July of 1558 so far. Give me a little time with that. Let me see what it is that I might have been looking at because that clearly is a longer term.
For Q outlook. Beans, I show the current price at 1437.
Yeah.
And then if we go back to the July beans, which are still trading, I believe,
there.
30,000 contracts traded today. That price I show as 1512.
Yeah, actually, right now, let's. I think I do have the July up here. The Q is trading. The August beans right now are trading at $14.36. So his question was, does the fact that we're in August, is that lower, or if we're in November? Bert is suggesting that we all roll to November. I'm going to wait on that only because we have a forecast for the beans to essentially go from 45 to 50 down to 31 to 32. In today's session, they've effectively done that. So now that that's done, or basically after the June 20th date, that's the date that would be due, plus or minus a day. After that date, I will roll into November. But November is a dramatically different looking soybean market than August is. And so we're just going to have to deal with that. So I don't have the answer to the question right now about the 16. I will go through my notes as well because I must have said something in our institutional meetings as well regarding that. So I'm sorry I don't have an answer immediately, but I may have one for you by tomorrow.
Okay.
So that's everything we have, Duane. It should be interesting. Tomorrow is Fed interest rate announcement, so we'll get a chance to see what the Fed wants to do, if it's just a plain old ordinary announcement with the plain old stuff, or if there's something really big cooking here. Should be interesting to see.
There's a question here. Is David's 1650, 51 level still important as resistance? He had mentioned that yesterday.
In the soybeans?
1650. No, I guess that's an S&P number.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry.
1650/51. That's from Richard. And then another Richard S. says, could you quickly summarize the S&P again? I came in late.
Is he asking me to summarize it? Okay, we'll just let's just say this. First of all, I want everybody to be careful with the S&P because tomorrow there's a interest rate announcement. So we want to use, no matter what the indications are, I would like people to be. I've been doing this for 23 years. That's a big chunk of my life, and I still to this day am very cautious about trading in front of reports. I don't mind trading today and even into tomorrow, but once the 15 minutes prior to the report, I'm not trading because I know what I'm doing, and I know when I don't know what I'm doing, and I'm not going to be trading until the market, you know, clears up after the report. So just keep in mind that bit of information. We were looking for the market to get up to, we had a daily top that was due on the 17th, plus or minus a day. This is the one day late, and we wanted to see the market get up to 47 to 49. And today's high, we talked about this so far, has been 48. So they're testing that level. There are some other levels of importance. One of them is this is a spiking level. This is not something that I would consider much different, but it's 50 to 51, what we talked about the other day on the program. And beyond that, 1658 and 1560 is important to us as well. So there's a whole series of numbers there. But the main thing is that for this June 17th plus a day top that they would normally be putting in, these are the levels that we would want to see, and that's why shorting the market for us that would be something that we would do if we had a really clean setup. We'd prefer to be on the long side of the market until they complete those numbers into the 18th, which is today. And so today we've gotten up to 48 so far. Other than that, I did mention earlier that we have a much bigger thing happening starting next week, but this is the 1 week early, and there's a big volatility cycle, and that can play into this Fed announcement and some other perhaps unknown news. I won't go all over it again, but we'll be back on tomorrow. We'll tie it all together tomorrow. Dwayne, anything else you want to add, Dwayne, yourself on S&P?
I'm gonna stick around a little bit. So if you're ready to take off, okay. I'll bid you adieu, sir.
Okay, thank you very much for the questions, you guys. Have a wonderful afternoon. Put a stop in when you trade because, you know, at some point it's going to be needed, and that's how it rolls. So don't worry about that. Put it in. Find a good spot where the market shouldn't go. Place a stop, and do that every single time, and you'll be in this business for a very, very long time. And with that, Dwayne,
standing in tall cotton.
That's right. I'll see you guys tomorrow.
All right, David.
Thanks very much.
Good afternoon. Okay. Bye bye.
I didn't notice what time it was. All I know is that I fell in love with you. And if all my dreams come true, I'll be spending time with you every day.
All right, I actually remembered to click the button that time. Unfortunately, past performance is no guarantee of future results, so I might remember to click it later, and I just might not. But I'm going to try. All right? I won't give up. Okay, guys, the tweet is out. And it's basically what we just spoke about. Let's take a look. It's so many ways to look at this thing. Hey, are you following us on our Facebook page? No, why not? Come on, I gotta pump up the jams on this thing. E-mini, see, we are E-mini futures trading on Facebook. That's pretty cool, right? All right, it's cooler if you follow us. I'm gonna put the link in the chat box, and if you don't follow us, my feelings are gonna be hurt. You notice I didn't laugh, right? No. I'm serious. It's very important, this Facebook stuff. Got a lovely look. Okay. Right here. Consider being long above 1649 or short below 1637, whichever presents first. Now, this is the markets demystified. All right. Well, sir, it sounds to me like somebody that doesn't really know what's going to happen next in the market. Well, that's true. I don't. The book. I know what you're thinking. Oh, boy, here he goes again with the book. Well, I'm telling you, if you haven't read the book, you need to read the book. In fact, I'll even give you the book. If you'll just, you can't read this one. You got to listen to it. Let me find my link. I'm going to get my link. I'm going to give away some books today. Let's see. Here we go. Now, the book I refer to is Trading in the Zone by Mark Douglas. Our sponsor, Audible, allows us to give our listeners one free audiobook. If you follow the link that I just put into the chat room, you can go there. You can download this book, and the bookstore costs you $40. All right? That's if you can find it. Probably you have to order it online. You can order it from Amazon. You can order it from Mark Douglas' site, markdouglas.com. If you follow the link I just gave you, you'll be able to download an audiobook, put it on your smartphone, your tablet, your desktop. It takes about 7.5 hours to listen to the entire book. Some wonder, well, how could a trading book be an audiobook? What about the charts? There's no charts. That's why a lot of people don't read the book, because it doesn't have a quick fix to go jump in the market and make some money. There's no trade setup. There's no indicator. There's no trigger. All the stuff that we as traders want. Oh, you mean I can't like read a paragraph and jump in the market and make, you know, money like an ATM? No. That's why a lot of people don't read the book. But I'm telling you, if you read the book, it's not going to cure everything, fix everything. You know, if you got bad habits, it's not going to change who you are. What it will do, though, is it will have an effect on how you think about trading. And it may take it a while to sink in. You might listen to it or read it a couple, three times before it really, really starts to sink in. Or you could have a earth-shattering experience like I did the first time. As soon as I read it the very first time, I was like, whoa, I never thought about it like that. And so now that I'm coming from a different point of reference, everything changed. Okay? So it teaches you to think in probabilities. For lack of a better analogy, we'll use the casinos in Vegas. I think we all know that they're pretty successful at what they do. Otherwise, they couldn't afford to build those big buildings and have all those bright lights and give away all those free cocktails, right? Now, how is it that their business model is so successful? Well, it's because they have rules and they follow the rules. Okay? They created the rules. They put the odds in their favor. When you walk through those doors and you reach into your pocket and you pull out some money, anywhere but the poker table, if you're going to the slots, or blackjack, or any of these other places, you have to know this going in. It's no secret. The odds are not in your favor. The casinos have created a set of rules that put the odds in their favor. Okay? Now, they don't expect to win every hand of blackjack, because if they won every hand, then Joe from Idaho would never come back again. They got to let Joe win some of the time. So they can't totally stack the deck against Joe. They have to stack it to the degree that they are guaranteed over the long haul that they're going to come out ahead. And they do. All you got to do is drive down Las Vegas Boulevard, and it's proven again and again and again that if the odds are in your favor, you come out ahead. Okay? Now, again, they're not worried about winning every hand of blackjack. That would just take the fun out of it. Unfortunately, when we step up to the trading platform, we expect to win every hand. Every trade we put on defines who we are as a trader, as a man, as a career choice. Man, it's all riding on this little trade. And that's just wrong. Okay? Got to get out of that way of thinking. You've got to learn to look at the bigger picture. You've got to learn to think in probabilities. And when you're putting together a trading methodology, you must use a large enough sample size so that it's statistically relevant. Okay? You can't take three trades and build a system. In Mark's book, the minimum sample size that he recommends for any type of testing is 20 trades. Now, you might go, oh, 20 trades, that's a lot. Well, it depends on your definition of a lot and how frequently you trade. If you're a swing trader and only take one trade a month, then yeah, it's going to take a while for you to get through that initial sample. If, on the other hand, you're a day trader and you use the four-tick range chart, you might get through 20 in, you know, the course of one day. It's possible. But you, no matter who you are, the swing trader or the four-tick range trader, you need a minimum sample size of 20. And there's nothing wrong with having more. Because you have, see, when the casino loses a hand of blackjack, they don't freak out. They don't break out in a cold sweat. They smile and they offer you another cocktail. How can they do that? Because they know over the long haul, they're going to come out ahead. How do they know that? Because they created the rules and the odds are in their favor. So when you create your trading plan, your method, all you have to do is stack the deck. All you have to do is put the odds in your favor. Really? Is it that easy? Well, there's a little catch, okay? Once you create the rules, once you stack the deck, then you got to actually follow the rules. Hang on one second. Bernard? Hang on, let me hang tight. I'm on the radio right now. Be with you shortly. See, they leave me here all by myself, fend for myself in the afternoons. Bert's on the phone. Leslie's always busy. Michael, I don't know where he goes. And then I got texts coming in. All right. So, Bernard, I'll get to you here in a few minutes. So back to where I was. You stack the deck in your favor, just like the casino. You write your rules, okay, so that you're going to come out ahead over the long haul, all right? But then you got to actually follow the rules that you create, and that's where we struggle. That's where we have difficulty. Now, in one of those casinos, all right, if that lady dealing the blackjack, if she doesn't follow the rules, they're going to bounce her out. There's no warnings. I mean, they get trained, and then this is what you do. And if you deviate, that'll cost you your job, because deviating from the plan will cause that big, mighty casino with the bright lights to crumble. See, the foundation of that building, you might think it's concrete and steel, but it's not. It's the rules that they operate by. And so that's why they have pit bosses and cameras and all this other stuff watching every single move that those dealers and everybody else involved in the gaming operations, not just blackjack where these rules are there, there's rules in the slots. They've got a percentage. Now, that's automated. It's mechanical. But still, the odds are in their favor. And most of the casino, or some of the casinos, I don't know, it used to be they would advertise what percentage of payout they offered. And they tried to compete against one another because our slots pay out 96%, or the next guy down the road would be 98%, and they'd go back and forth like, you know, gas stations competing for your business by running out there and lowering the price of their gas by a penny so that when you get to the intersection, you'll turn left instead of turning right, okay? So that's what it comes down to, is once you accept the large enough sample size that you got to think in probability, then you got to, you know, create a rule set. Now, this is where the rubber meets the road. You got to actually follow those rules. And that's where we struggle. It's not that hard to write a plan. The tough part is sticking to the plan. Okay? You don't have to be a great trader. You simply have to be great at following your plan. And I'm going to tell you, even if your plan is only mediocre, okay, if you have a mediocre plan, if you're great at following that mediocre plan, over the long haul, you'll be okay. Why? How can I say that? Because the odds are in your favor. It really is that simple. I didn't say easy, because I'll never say it's easy, but it can be simple. So I do want you to read the book if you've never read the book, okay? I've just given you a link that will allow you to download it for free legally. This isn't some bootleg thing. This is our sponsor, and they want you to become a member of their book club, okay? So they give you a free trial. You get 2 weeks to make up your mind whether or not you want to be in the book club. So when you take the free trial, yes, you got to give them a credit card. Yes, you got to give them your Amazon account number. This company is owned by Amazon, Jeff Bezos. And so you can rest assured that your credit card information is, well, as safe as it is with any online retailer. But you have 2 weeks to decide whether or not you want to continue your membership. You can cancel any time during those 2 weeks, and you're never charged a dime. See, they don't charge your card until after your two-week trial. So you've got 2 weeks to make up your mind. If you decide to cancel, you don't have to call up and sit on hold. You just log into your account and just tick the box. I'd like to cancel my account. And just like that, it's gone. But the good news, you get to keep the book. All 6.5 hours, you get to keep the book. Now, what's really great about Audible and their audiobooks, aside from the fact that there's 100,000 titles to choose from, so if you already have Trading in the Zone, you can go get yourself another book. You can get Steve Jobs' biography. That thing's like 27 hours. But there's books for every genre, you know, kids' books, books about religion and science, fiction, nonfiction, you name it, it's there. Okay, so if you don't need Trading in the Zone because you already have it, not just because you think you don't need it, because if you don't have it, trust me, you need it. Well, I'm doing okay. Well, you still need it, all right? I'll sleep better knowing you've read it, okay? Now, I don't make any money if you read the book. It doesn't change my quality of life. I'm pleading with you to read the book for your benefit, okay? So, with that said, once you download that baby, you can put it on your phone, put it on your tablet, put it on your desktop. Wherever you're at, standing in line at the DMV or the grocery store, you can be listening to the book. And then when you get to the office and you pull your earbuds out and fire up your desktop, it remembers where you left off. It'll pick right up and keep reading to you. It's pretty neat, okay? I don't want to oversell the concept of audiobooks, but it's a pretty neat concept. When I took the free trial, I never imagined that 2 years later, almost 3 years later, I would still be a member of the book club. I didn't think I was a book club kind of guy. Turns out, I am. And I got a ton of unused credits. I need to go download some free audiobooks. Well, they're not free because I paid for them. I think I pay $15 a month to be in the club. And the average audiobook, I think, runs about 25, so I save 10 bucks a month. Now, I could stop my subscription right now, and I would have all those credits that I've accrued, and I'd probably have audiobooks to last me for the next couple years because I only have, you know, so many minutes in a day to devote to that little hobby. But audiobooks are great. If you're going to be a trader, Trading in the Zone is required reading. It just is. Whether you use my methodology, whether you follow David and the Reflected Wave or the Messenger Pro or however you trade, you know, whoever you follow, whoever tells you when to get in, when to get out, read a book, okay? Now, speaking of getting in and getting out, our goal at CFRN is to teach you how to trade. Our goal is to teach you how to be, you know, the master of your own domain. In other words, at the end of 90 days, our goal is that you no longer need us or anyone to tell you when to get in, when to get out. Our goal is to teach you to read the chart like a newspaper, like a treasure map. I wrote about charts last night on the blog. I put the link in the chat room. If you came late and you can't see the link, then just go to the blog, and it's last night's post. I talk about the different type of charts, what's available today compared to what used to be available. I even put a picture up of one of Mike Reed's old hand-drawn charts. Okay, we've come a long way with charting technology since the birth of the Internet. Mike Reed used to chart by hand, reading the Wall Street Journal's daily numbers a day after the fact. Now, every split second, we're getting a tick, constantly updated. Now, some say that's good, and some say, well, that's just a lot of noise. And so some people back away and still use the larger time frame. I have complete respect for that. I believe that if you train yourself, train your eyes, you can do both. And I think that the two play off of each other beautifully. Okay? And so that's our goal. If you become a CFRN partner, is that over the course of the 90 days, you'll learn how to read that chart, like a newspaper, like a treasure map, however, whatever analogy you want to use. But see, each little tick, each candle, each hook and crook of that chart is speaking to you. Every candle has a story to tell. Every candle on that chart, no matter what time frame, it might not even be time, it might be ticks or range or volume, but every candle or bar on your chart is a graphic representation of investor sentiment for that time frame. Right there. That's it. So if you've not taken the free trial, by all means, go to cfrn.net/apply, take the free trial, spend 5 days in the live trading room, download the platform, install the indicators, ask lots and lots of questions, and then at the end of a week, you'll be in a position to make a well-informed decision as to whether or not becoming a CFRN partner is what's right for you. We know it's not right for everybody. That's why we give you the free trial. So you can make the decision for yourself. No credit card required. Now, the tweet is out. I think I mentioned that already. Let me take a quick look in the chat box here. Okay, the tweet is out. And get that out of the way. Okay, we haven't triggered yet. We're taking a look at the tweet itself. Consider being long above 1649 or short below 1637, whichever presents first. All right, so here's what that looks like. 1649 is up here. Dude, there we go. And what was the other number? 1637. Now, 49 might be obvious, it might not be, but I'll do my best to explain it to you. Okay, so we got 49 up here, 37 down here. Our next weekly trading zone is way up there. It's like 20 points away, okay? So I don't have a problem letting it kind of break away from the gravitational pull of this zone, 42, 43. I want it to really kind of convince me that it's serious about making the trip all the way up to the next zone. That's why I've set the bar so high here. Hey, I want to be convinced. If we're going to fail and come back down through this zone, I've got to consider what's an obstacle. What's in now up here, I don't have any obstacles. If we look left, in recent days, I've got no obstacles there. Now, we can go back further in time and find some, but I don't think we need to at the moment. Right here, what obstacles are in my way? If I look left, nothing, right? There's always something, right? Look over here. See this? See this swing high right here? Just drag a line across. Believe it or not, that swing high, as we start to come down, that swing high right there could very easily become support on this chart. If we take this line and we just drag it all the way across, see that? See that line right across there? Okay. In fact, we might be better served if I did this. Okay. Because it's an area. It's not an exact number. It's this little area. So the reason I don't want to get short until 37 is because I want to give price the room to come down and test this area, and possibly as it comes down, it might want to spike it a little bit. It might want to do a little bit of, you know, this action right here. See? In other words, I want to, if it's going to go to this zone, 32, 33, I want it to really show me it's serious. So once we break 37, there's still 4 points. There's still 4 points between 37 and 33. 4 points room to run. That's plenty of room to get 2 points. If that's my goal. My goal is to take a couple points out of the market every day. From 37 to 33, that's 4 points room to run. Plenty of room to grab a couple points. Up here, we've got lots and lots and lots of room to run. But again, I want the market to show me it's serious, that it means business, that it's really going to take off. Okay. And honestly, I would rather not see it break through 49 right now. I would rather see it come back, bounce around, consolidate, test this area, just build up a full head of steam, man, and then pow, take off. I'd rather see that. I mean, we don't always get what we want. But in a perfect world, I'd like to see that. Okay? All right. So, not sure what lines you're referring to. Like here, we've got a weekly zone at 32.33 and then a zone up here at 42.43. So from just the inside, from 33 to 42, that's 9 points. Down here from 24 to 32, that's 8 points. So give me an idea. This is for Jim M. Give me an idea of the support and resistance lines that you're referring to. Now, if you are referring to these here on this chart, this is a daily chart. Let me open it up a little bit. From here, from this support area, 1348, the swing high up there is 1391. That's about the equivalent of 50 S&P points. Here, dynamic support is at 1310. Resistance is at 48. This is the equivalent of 38 S&P points. So if I'm not reading your question correctly, then by all means share it with me so that I can answer it properly for you. Kevin, I don't know if you're listening to the show, but we're not a trade calling service. We teach you how to trade. We teach you how to call your own. That's better said. Okay. All right. So, Jim, I'll wait for you to type in. Sound not working. I'm back. Pivot highs and lows on a 5-minute chart. Jim, I'm not using a 5-minute chart. So if you have too much support and resistance on your chart, on a 5-minute chart, then maybe you need to use a different chart, different time frame. I can go look at a 5-minute chart for you. Let's see. Let's use this chart. It's clean. So I'm going to go to 5 minutes. I'm going to go to the S&P 500, ESU. Okay. Okay, here's a swing low at 1642. The dynamic resistance is up at 1646. That's a 4-point move. And then from 46 back down to 43, got a 3-point move back down. And then from 43 up to 48, that's a 5-point move back up. And I'm using the 5-minute chart that you said you were working with. Yes, Kevin, we do have a free trial. Hang on, guys. Let me type this in. Okay. Jim says look left. Where, Jim? Tell me where to look left. See, there's a swing high, swing low, swing high, swing low, swing high, swing low. Again, if the chart that you're using, Jim, you've never seen us use a 5-minute chart because it doesn't serve us well. I'm not saying you can't use a 5-minute chart. Many people do, and I can day trade off of a 5-minute chart, but I have other options available to me that work better for trading intraday. Now, I could trade off of this on a 5-minute chart. All I got to do is sell 1638, sell 1638, and buy 36. It's 2 points, 3 points, 4 points. All of the naked swing pivot highs from the moves up from a basing low. Jim, I'm not sure what question. If you've got a question, I'll sure try to answer it for you. I'm just not sure. I don't know if you're just making a comment or I appreciate the comment and that's great, but if you have a question, I want to answer it. And so sometimes I have to read through the comment to try to figure out the question. But if you can just explain the question, I'll sure take a stab at trying to answer it. Hey, Jonathan, thanks. Is the audio? Can you hear me now? All right. I guess I faded out there for a minute. Oh, I think I see your question now, Jim. How do you deal with the support and resistance obstacles? Well, how do you deal with them is you use them to your benefit. They become your targets. They become a known obstacle. So if I'm going to get in here, let's say that I know this right here, this swing high. I can draw a line across my chart. Now I get this little double bottom going on down here. Okay. So whatever I got going on gets me long, you know, coming up out of this little bottom here. I look left and I see that swing high. That's my target. I know that's going to be a potential obstacle to my trade. It didn't stop this trade, but it sure gave me a shoot to target, and it gave me plenty of room from down here at 35 to take a couple points on the way up to 39. So I hope that helps. Now, let me scroll way back up because there was a ton of comments in here. Dwayne, do you mind sharing the YM weekly zones? No, I don't mind. I thought I had them on a chart earlier. Let's go to the YM. YMM3. Nope, we need YU. YMU. How about that? There we go. Okay. Now let's get out of this 5 minute, go to an hour. Okay. And for the purpose of this, we don't need those. Okay. So let's see. Weekly trading zones for the Dow. Overhead, we've only got one more zone overhead, just like the S&P. We just cruised through a zone. 15,220 to 225. Okay, so we just broke through there. Below that was 15,135. This is going to be 140. Okay. So we can see how price really hugged that little area right there. Let me open this up a little bit. And then we'll throw one more up there below that, 15,030. 15,030. There we go. 15,035. Okay. All right. So this is Sunday. So we don't really need anything on our chart more than that. This is the beginning of the week. So price ran up, hit this weekly zone, pulled back. You know, this is just almost a mirror image of what happened in the S&P. Let's look. Let's go to Sunday night on the S&P. See how we went up, hit that zone, pulled back, didn't quite make it to the next zone. Look, pulled back, didn't quite make it to the next zone. And then on the pullback here, we came just a couple ticks short. The low was 42, and we were trying to get down to 35. Okay. And here we actually touched it on the S&P, on the Dow, a couple ticks shy. We go back up, bump our head on this zone. We try for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 hours to get through it. Finally break through, and then what does price do? It does this. Goes like that, and then it goes like that, and then it goes like that. And what has it basically done right here? Although you can't see it so clearly on an hourly, if you go to a smaller time frame, you can. Price has gone like this, and then it came back on that second hourly candle to test the zone. And now in the third hourly candle, it's trying to take off and head to that next zone overhead, which is a couple hundred points away. The zones are so far away on the Dow and the S&P right now that I almost don't want to see them get triggered right now, because I just don't know if the market's got the energy to see it through. So if you're going to trade this, keep that in mind. In fact, on the S&P, if you get triggered, if we get a trigger at 49, okay, hitting 49 is not necessarily everybody jump into the pool, but maybe it's at that point that you go to your four tick range chart. And you find a trade that meets the criteria. 1649 is up here. We've gotten really close. Okay. In fact, if the green line drops down to the bottom, starts moving down, then that is divergence. We had our bullish cross way back here. Price has pulled away and pulled back a couple of times. So basically, we've got a trade right here. But by using the slingshot to get you into this trade, the most you have to risk is 2 points. Even though it's a big picture objective and the next zone is 20 points away, getting into it this way, you only have to risk 2. So maybe you get stopped out once or maybe even twice. If you're going to hang in there and on the third time let it run, I mean, that's a whole separate skill set when it comes to trading, above and beyond just, you know, the ordinary day trading skill set that you need to stay in that longer move as you begin to rack up 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 12, 15 points to let that thing keep going and not pull the plug. It's a special skill set, and you have to, that's learned behavior, because the instinct is to grab the money and run. And I'm not against that, okay? You just have to decide what it is you're going to do, who you're going to be, how you're going to trade. And it may be that you're going to behave differently and trade differently under different circumstances. That's fine. Just define those circumstances ahead of time so that you're never shooting from the hip. Remember, you don't have to be a great trader. You simply have to be great at following even a mediocre plan. That's the key. So, Chris, there was the YM zones for you. Hope that helped. Jonathan has a good statistic. House Advantage is no more than 2% on blackjack, yet they make $55 billion a year because they never vary their rules. Well said. Thank you very much for sharing that statistic. I'm going to write that down. 2%, $55 billion on blackjack. I'll commit that to memory. That's a great little statistic. RG, can I install this on my desktop also? Are you referring to the audiobook? If you are, the answer is yes. Jonathan says that the slots in Vegas have to have a specific percentage stated as part of the gaming laws in Vegas. So I'm guessing you can ask at the front desk and maybe find out. Jonathan says you could use reverse fibs from the last move to find a level above. Absolutely. Yep, sure can. Which, again, would be an area. But what he's talking about, guys, is right here. You go to your drawing tools. Go to Fibonacci price extension. If you're measuring just the last leg, and if that is all the pullback we're going to get, now let's start over. Okay, insert drawing tools, Fibonacci price extension. These are levels overhead based on Fibonacci and based on just the last leg, not the entire move from back here or from here, but just using the last leg, reasonable price targets overhead based on the Fibonacci sequence would be 1650, 53, 54, and then 100%, which would be a measured move. In other words, let me show you what a measured move is. From the low to the high, $1,660. So those are reasonable targets. on the upside once we get through 59. Okay, Chris, you're welcome. Okay, let's see. So, Jim, I guess you're looking at an ES chart, and you're saying if you were to go long at 5:33 a.m. from 16:33, but resistance was at 16:37 and then 16:39. Okay. Well, from 16:33 to 16:37 is 4.5. That's 4.5 points. I'm still not sure what your question is, Jim. I'll go back to that 5-minute chart for a second here. I don't know if you're on East Coast time. Let's see, the price you used was 16.3750. Oh, I need to go to the U contract, ESU. Okay, so you're looking at this morning when price was at 16.3750. No, you're going long at 16:33. Okay. Are you talking about right here? Are you talking about going long off the weekly trading zone here? Jim M? Okay. I'm still not sure what your question is. I mean, 16:33, we pull back into a zone, and then price moves higher, pulls back to the BBC, and then it pretty much goes straight up to 16:42, pulls back into the BBC close, and then continues to move up to 45. So, I mean, I would have no trouble trading this just based on the fact that price broke above this swing high right here and then pulled back to the BBC. Now, guys that are partners, you know I've taught you that this little area right here, that's a powerful little area right there. Okay, this is where I've talked to you guys about it here. After the radio show, right there is where the ball changes hands, okay? The ball changed hands right there, and they marched it right up the field. So is there a specific question about this, Jim? This is on the 5-minute chart that you were referring to. Now, I can put it on a different chart, and it'll look a little bit differently. Let me put it back on the 10,000 contract I had it on before. There we go. See right here? Pull back into the zone. Move up. Pull back to the BBC. Pull back to the BBC. Then it's gone. We can put that on a, we can even go to a 1-minute chart. That's a 1-minute chart right there. Price comes down into the zone. See price coming down, pulls back, down into the zone, hits the BBC, we get the cross, the ball changes hands, we pull back into the BBC, and from right here, that long, getting long right there, get a little bit of a drawdown, but from 35 half up to 37 half, there's 2 points right there in that little area. So, it's the green line, Bob. The BBC is the bull bear cross line. Hey, when price is above it, the bulls are in control. When price is below it, the bears are in control. Elliott people would have been long above 34 after the ABC. It's all the same, just different words. Yeah, well said, Jonathan. You know, all the different labels and terminology and different things, you know, sometimes it seems like there's just so much out there to learn. Man, how could I ever learn it all? And how do I know which one's right, which one's proper, which one really works? I hate that terminology. I just hate it. Oh, how do I know this works? I don't know. How do you know if it works? The markets are open every day. Price moves back and forth between buyers and sellers. Buyers were buying, and then they ran into so much selling pressure at this price point right here, 1648.75. Suddenly there was more selling pressure than buying pressure, and now they're pushing it down. The question is, are buyers going to come in and support it? Is that an attractive price? Is that fair value, 1648.75? So, I always hear that. How do I know if it works? I don't know. I don't know how you know if it works, because I'm looking at it with a broader stroke. The markets work. The markets open every day, and price channels back and forth between the buyers and the sellers. My job is simply to figure out who has the ball right now, and I want to get in the middle of that group and just run down the field with them. I don't want to be a hero. I don't want to throw the ball. I don't want to catch the ball. I don't want to block anybody. You know, when that pack starts moving down the field, man, let me just get right in the middle of them. And I don't need to run from goal line to goal line. I just need to move 2 yards. 100 yards on the playing field, I just need to move 2 yards. In the direction the ball is being moved, and I'm good. I'm done for the day. Question is, how do you deal with resistance areas every couple of points? At 1633, if you were thinking of going long, there was so much chop and confusion between 1633 to 1635. Then if you were to take a daring trade long in that area, there was resistance at 3750, then again at 39. So how is a trader not to get confused when every couple of points there is resistance to your trade? Well, that's the whole point, Jim. If it were easy, everybody would do it. One thing for sure is that you're using a time frame that is going to create a lot of noise and a lot of confusion. Okay? On my chart right here, this morning when price came down to 1633, you don't see any chop or confusion on my chart, do you? Right now. Do you see any chop or confusion there? Nope, that thing's clean as a whistle, man. Price came down, touched 1633, and then rose right up to 1642, went from zone to zone. No noise, no confusion. We always want to, they say this is human nature. All traders go this route. We want to get to that smaller time frame because reason tells us that that allows us to reduce our risk. That's partially true. Smaller time frames do allow you to reduce your risk. That's why I said on the hourly chart here, when we have a big picture setup, you can go to the 4-tick range to find an entry, okay? But when you get down to a really small time frame, you got to know you're dealing with some noise. And you have to be prepared for that. If you know you're dealing in noise, it's just like guys that work in a noisy shop. What do? They wear them big old ear muff things all day long so they don't lose their hearing. If you're going to work in noisy conditions, a five-minute chart, then you have to be prepared for that. If you don't want to work in the noisy conditions, increase your time frame. Go to something like an hourly chart that gives you clear vision. And then when price pulls back to 33 and it's time to take action, then roll over to your four tick and find an entry. Let's go look at that on a four tick range. Okay, right here, 1633. Bullish cross, price pulled away, price pulled back. From there to there. Try that, Jim. See if it won't help you. You don't have to take any trades just for a day. Just spend a day watching an hourly chart or a 30-minute chart. Even a 15-minute, if you're used to watching a 5-minute chart, a 15-minute candle will seem like forever, okay? If you're used to watching 5 minutes, all right, try that. See if it doesn't give you a little clarity. Now, trust me, first time somebody suggested to me that I day trade with an hourly chart, I thought they were absolutely nuts because I had been using this ridiculously short time frame. I think it was a 55 tick or something. And then I was using an 89 tick. And I'm not talking about a range chart. I'm talking about a tick chart. 55 ticks, 89 ticks. I think I was trading the YM at one point with 21 ticks. Again, not a range chart, 21 ticks. Goodness gracious, that's so noisy and herky-jerky. And so when somebody came along and said, hey, maybe you should take a look at a larger time frame. I was like, what? You got to be crazy. I got to be where the action is, man. So it took a while. I finally came around, and I didn't go straight to the hourly. I went to the 144 tick and then the 233 tick and then, you know, the 610 tick. And any of those are great, you know. There is no magical time frame. But I've really gotten comfortable watching the hourly. And I really do believe that where the hour closes and opens relays very important information to a trader. At least for me it does. So I got to run, guys. Jerry asks, are you using the wick for support and resistance? I'm not sure what you mean by that, Jerry. I mean, here, the low of this candle, the low was 32.75, and there is a wick, and the market did find support at the weekly zone 32.33, but I don't think I'm understanding your question properly when you ask, am I using the wick for support and resistance? Jonathan said if the wick touches or just the body. Oh, when you draw support and resistance. Are you talking about this line right here? Is that the line you're talking about, Jerry? That line? Oh, the zone? You're talking about the weekly trading zone? Okay, these are weekly trading zones. These are put out for the traders every Monday morning before the market opens. Oh, the red rectangle? Okay, so where I just put the arrow, that's just the line that we put out a tweet, okay? And the tweet said to consider being long above 49 or short below 37. And the reason that I drew this line, I'll show you. And then I really got to go, okay? I said, coming down, once we get below this zone at 42 and below that swing low, if we look left, there's really nothing in our way. So it appears. But if we come right over here, this swing high is important to the market structure. So what I did was I drew a line from this swing high, because that is the high. It doesn't matter if it's a wick or not. It's still the high. I drew a line straight across, okay, right there. And then I extended the line to show you even more so why it was important. Because that line that I drew from that high over here, if I go left, look where it takes me. It takes me right through the wick of that. Okay? And it just so happens to be the high there. But what's important, because this is the most recent in history, I'm interested in this swing high. If price comes below that zone, this swing high, draw a line across, there's a good chance that becomes support. If that support, and then to point out that it's an area and not a specific number, I put the little pink box to sort of display the fact that it's an area. So once this area is broken, if we get below 37, I'm comfortable taking the short down to 33. Okay. Now what I'm looking for up here right now, what I'd like to see is that that. Oh, boy, I am tired. I can't even draw. This thing has some crude drawing tools. I feel like I'm in a cave. Boom, boom, boom. I don't know if that's going to happen, but remember I said earlier, rather than price just breaking out right here, right now, I'd rather see it come back to the zone and consolidate for a while, spend a little, you know, a couple hours coiling up, building up a full head of steam, woo-woo, and then take off like a rocket. I'd rather see that than to see it just channel its way up there, because it doesn't have much energy at that point. It struggles so hard to get through there, it's out of energy. So let it come back, coil up, get some energy, rest up, and then phew, take off. Now that's in my perfect world scenario. Will that happen? I don't know. Because I don't know what's going to happen next. There you go, Jonathan. Jonathan said it well. I can guarantee it's either going to break 44 or 49. Bank on it. I agree. It will. True story. You are a master trader. Just for you, horror news. Don't rule out Geithner as the new Fed chief. Wow. Seriously? Chris goes on to say, the man who didn't pay his taxes. I know. That is amazing. Jerry asks, so this area in here, Dwayne, no man's land, and would you ever consider taking a position into the Fed? No, I would not take a position into the Fed. Well, I mean, I'll trade today. I'll trade tomorrow morning. But once we get within an hour of the Fed announcement, hour and a half, I see no reason to put on a trade, because all you're doing is gambling on the volatility. And unfortunately, the volatility, even the correct choice, if you think it's going to go higher, if you gamble that the volatility is going to push price higher, you could be right, and the volatility could still stop you out, because it runs down before it runs up, and vice versa. If you gamble that whatever the Fed does is going to push the markets lower, it might run up before it runs lower. And so I've traded the Fed many times. I've done okay. I've gotten hurt. I've just decided that it's in my best interest to climb up into the bleachers, eat some popcorn, watch the action down on the field, and then once everything calms down, then I'll go back and play some more. But not, I don't trade in front of any news event. Now, there are people, that's their specialty. That's what they do. They trade the news. I'm not that guy. And is this no man's land? Well, I guess you could use that as a term. I have nothing here to motivate me to take a trade, except moving up above 49. Up above 49, I'm interested in being long. But between here and the zone, not really. You know, if the 4-tick range were to give a short trade and there was enough room to run, I would consider going short back down to 43, but I'm pretty sure on the 4-tick range chart, it's not going to give you an opportunity and there's not enough room to run. Yeah, we just got the bearish cross. So a lot needs to happen. And then you've only got... you know, depending upon where your entry is, I just don't think there's sufficient room to run. So I guess the answer to your question, Jerry, is nope. I don't have anything here, Jerry F. Would you ever bracket the volatility for a quick scalp? I won't, Jerry, because you can just, you know, again, some people do it and do that well. I just don't have an interest in it. I don't want anything with sprinkles or swirls. I want plain vanilla every day. Just give me one scoop of vanilla and I'm good. Oh, sir, wouldn't you like some sprinkles with that? Nope. Could I get you a sugar cone? Nope. One scoop of vanilla, that's it. Nothing else. Sir, that's kind of boring. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, so that's just me, Jerry. You know, brother, if it works, I mean, I'm not against anything that works for anybody. You know, you just ask me if I do it. No, I don't. So, okay. All right, I'm going to go, guys. I've been threatening now for I don't know how long, but I really am. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with his mercy and with his grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this. There is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision. Manning the desk from our studio in Chicago is Burton Bert Schlichter. Bert is an e-mini options trading expert, teacher, and mentor. Countless retail and institutional clients have reaped the benefits of his 15 years of experience. He places a strong emphasis on trading the markets from a technical standpoint, and his extensive knowledge of options trading strategies is evident as a CFRN co-host. His impressive resume includes senior market analyst for Daniels Trading. Bert has also written for Reuters, CBS MarketWatch, and has been featured on British television for his S&P commentary. Tune in weekdays at noon Eastern for live reports straight from the broker's desk.